Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, welcome back to another edition of Leaving the Ring Radio. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Gabriel Montoya, and the man behind the switchboard, Mr. David Chen. Anyways, man, what a knockout. What a beautiful, beautiful knockout from Lucas Matisse's over Mike Dallas Jr. A lot of us got to be surprised. I know a lot of us were thinking that at least Mike was going to give him some rounds. I thought that Mike was going to be able to give him some rounds. Just because of the fact that he's been with Virgil Hunter for quite some time, and in preparation was going to be a little bit different. Let me take that back. Not preparation, just the mindset. The mindset alone, you know, being with one of the best trainers in the world, you got to give that credit. But credit is thrown out the door when you got a big puncher who can land at the point of the chin that's just going to change everything around. And that's what happened. A good boxer got caught, put some flaws out there that was just a bit too early. And guess what? It cost him the whole fight. Was knocked out cold. I mean, just to start off the new year, the first month of the new year, Mike Dallas Jr. is going to be remembered as the man that was laid out in 2013, January, against the Argentinian Lucas Matisse. Gabriel, take yourself off mute.
Sorry, I was putting out our link. I got to be first to admit, you know, I thought the fight would go rounds. I thought that Dallas would extend things. I thought he'd be more settled. He, you know, I got to make a criticism that all this, the kind of gamesmanship by Virgil Hunter with the Amino Fuel 4500, which was, it's just nothing, dude. If anything, it's like a post-workout recovery drink. It's not going to help you in the game at all. It's not going to give you more energy. It's not going to increase speed, power, focus, endurance, any of that. I thought that time should have been spent with your guy in the first big fight of his career, who clearly came out very tight, very nervous. All that time should have been spent with your boy, getting him ready. You know, the time for gamesmanship is, in my opinion, press conference. Unless they're really doing something. And if you really cared and worried about what was in that substance, then you should have bottled it, sealed it right there, had them send it to a lab, test it out. I mean, I don't believe that's...
See, in his defense, though, you know, let me play devil's advocate, is he's in the dressing room. He's really not aware of what was being, you know, what he was taking. I think he just witnessed Lucas taking some supplement, a supplement of something, a pill of something, and curiosity had to kick in. You know, I mean, that's the right thing for a trainer to do, is to start questioning and find out. And maybe when he was told what it was, I don't think he was quite educated about exactly what Lucas was consuming and stuff. So I think in that part,
no, I think
he
was
you're
doing,
right.
But think, once you realize that there wasn't,
right,
that it wasn't a big deal, and you read off the ingredients and you understood it, like, there was still protest. I mean, I guess, you know, maybe that's what Virgil was asking, was to steal the thing and take it. But I don't know. I can understand. He was being – I'm not saying
– I think in a time of
peak vigilance,
what you're being told and what you know of the authorities behind the scene, that, you know, it can always be – it's always a show-and-tell type of deal where – not even a show-and-tell. It's always a show-and-not-tell type of deal. They could have been telling him one thing, and I think he was digging to see whether or not there was truth behind what he was being –
But again, you know, seal all the stuff, send it off. Like, you know, it doesn't seem like that step was taken.
Right.
All of a sudden, it was that press row. Here's this evidence. And that was a big criticism I had in the Margarito case with Mosley. It was that chain of custody. I mean, if they'd have gone to trial, it's why I kind of argue with fans when they sit there and say, he did this or he did that. You know, if that would have gone to trial, it would have been thrown out immediately just on chain of custody, just because everybody and their brother got a gander at the raps. You know, they treated it like a good old boys club rather than, hey, this – is potentially damaging evidence in a case. Let's seal it. Let's get it taken care of. I mean, it was just poorly handled. I think in this case, you know, it's a guy's reputation on the line. And TV gets in there and starts filming it and like, wait a minute, there's a situation going on here. And there, you know, this might jeopardize the fight. I understand, you know, if it seriously was going to jeopardize the fight, maybe it's something you should cover. But it's a guy's reputation. They should have known what the substance was before putting it. I didn't even put it in my fight report. I thought it was so nonsensical, you know, especially
right.
Once you realize what, or so unnecessary, I guess is the word. The vigilance was great by Virgil Hunter. I think that's great. But when we get into these kind of gamesmanship things, like Tito Trinidad, I firmly believe to this day there was nothing wrong with those raps, and people ruined his reputation was ruined off of that Bernard Hopkins story. And Brother Nazim, you know, respect to the guy, but I've listened to him tell that story, and
right.
It's changed, and I've listened to him tell the Margarito story, and he told that to me to my face, and it was different than everybody else's, and it kind of has changed as I've watched it in the media. That's the danger of that kind of journalism. People accuse me of that kind of stuff. No, not even close, dude. You got to really know you got to be really dead solid on your source before you go out with stuff like that. And you got to be really solid in your story and what you're implying about somebody's reputation.
Exactly.
That said, what a knockout, dude. I mean, Lucas Matisse, I think he's every bit what we think he is. He's a guy like Golovkin. I'm on the train. I'm on board. I've been on board with both these guys for a while.
I've been a believer. Let me, you know, with Mike Dallas Jr. getting knocked out, whether if it was the first, the seventh, or the last round, the guy's got power in his hands. There's no doubt about it. There's no argument about that at all. He's a proven factor. And here's the thing, too. The Zab Judah fight, with Zab is kind of parading around that, you know, I beat this guy and I beat this guy. When, you know, this is where I have a problem, is that when, you know, being honest, and I understand the commentators got to do their job and they're being paid to have a certain agenda and direction where they're going to go with something. But at the same time, you catch a guy in a web, you got to call him out and say, hey, you know what? You did get it on paper, but in the fans' views, in the world, nobody thought you won that fight. And that tells you where Lucas Matisse stands as a fighter, not just as a puncher, as a fighter, you know, where the guy has been robbed from previous fights, and he's very competitive. He's very, you know, I wouldn't say he's the greatest boxer, but he boxes enough where he can be convincing to pass on a decision that it's not even given to him.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, he's a guy that it is kind of not fair that he's not given the credit that he's due, and people are like, oh, it's kind of dismissing him. He's got these losses. I didn't think either of those are losses. And if I'm going to lose, I guess that's the way I'm going to, you know, the way I'd want to if I was Matisse. He made a good account of himself. He should have, I think, gotten the job done. I guess that's what you have to do against Alexander. I think he learned from those fights, though, dealing with the speed and power and athleticism of Judah and Alexander, has made all these other guys kind of easy to get after. Soto trying to move around and skate around the ring like a pure boxer, he's, you know, I don't think Matisse is laughing at it, but it's certainly easier to track him down and beat him down than it was the other two guys. And then, you know, Dallas has all those kind of tools, but just so tense and just hopping around the ring. And somebody like was saying, well, that's how he always fights. I mean, yeah, but this seemed a little more tense. And even that final move, it was just herky-jerky, threw out a real lazy jab, leaves it out there, leaves his head exposed. And he's in just a weird position, kind of sideways.
Talking about that, and this was off the air when we were discussing that. And I asked you, did you kind of witness that he was kind of, when he was pulling away, when he was trying to get away from the shots, he was almost not even looking at what Matisse was going to do next. He was really kind of looking at the canvas, and he was sideways. He was, you know, he wasn't pulling straight back. He was pulling straight sideways, and that's when that shot, it was just a perfect connection to that chin. I don't know what Mike Dallas Jr. was thinking. I don't know if his mind just kind of drifted away, but it really cost. Whatever happened, whatever was going through his body, through his thoughts, it cost him that fight, you know. And like I said, I didn't think for sure he was going to be able to win this fight, but I thought for sure that he was going to be able to give in some rounds and, you know, given a good account that he's matured and he's gotten better with Virgil Hunter. But this is the fight game. There's no mercy in it. You know what I mean? There's no mercy for slippage.
I don't even think it's a matter of even slippage so much as just, I think Mike Dallas is who he is. And it's kind of rude to say, but when you look at that amateur career, and we talked about this last week, a guy that always kind of comes up short when he gets, not always kind of, always comes up short when he gets to that next level. And he did it as an amateur, and he does it as a pro. He's just not on that level. And maybe down the line he matures and becomes that guy. But, I mean, even Obakar was kind of competitive in those, you know, moments as being the guy that was good but just not good enough. I'm not sure where Dallas goes from this. It was a brutal knockout, one punch. You know, Steve said this heading in, and I didn't tell you this before the show, but Steve Kim's probably going to stop by on his birthday around 7:15 to give us the lowdown on what's going down in boxing. But he talked about punch resistance. He was like, it's, you know, skills, blah, 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 all that stuff, Virgil Hunter, whatever. Punch resistance is going to be the problem. You know, punching power and punching resistance. And that's just what it came down to. Perfect punch, guy that can't take a punch so great, certainly not at the top level. And that's that, as they say, like when they killed Joe Pesci in Goodfellas. And he's gone. He's gone. There's nothing you can do about it.
No, there's definitely nothing you can do about it. Fight fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598. I'm going to put out your area code and patch you in on through. And you can join the conversation between myself, Dave Duenas, and Gabriel Montoya here on Leaving the Ring Radio. Let's go with area code 240. You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind?
Hey, what's happening, fellas? This is Augustus. I was listening to you guys.
How are you, man? You're from Twitter, right?
Augustus, boxing certified on Twitter. That's right.
Well, wow, man, welcome to the show.
Well, yeah, it's good to be on here, man. I watched that fight, and I looked at Dallas. He lost the fight on the walk to the ring. Well, actually, he lost the fight when they signed the contract. I mean, I don't. Seriously, man, that's a management problem, man. If I was in that guy's part of it, of his team, I wouldn't have put him in that position to fight a guy like Matisse. I mean, it's bad management, man. That kid, as you guys said, he has never really made it to the next level. And every step up, he's failed. And it's like a setup, man. And to get knocked out like that.
You know what's funny is that when he came on, and I've had a few people that, they email me. Even publicists have even said that. Dave, it's almost kind of disrespectful when you ask them, do you think you're ready? And
right.
I don't feel like that. I honestly did not feel he was ready for Lucas Matisse. I wanted to hear his reaction. His reaction was to us, which was he was kind of offish about it, which he should be. He's a fighter. He's got to believe in himself. But
right.
Like,
as a fighter, you have to, even though, and I was an amateur fighter for many years, even though, it's a part of you that says, you know what, this may be, I'm probably bitten off a little more than I can chew, but when you guys ask me the question, hey, my ego and my everything else says, yeah, of course, I'll fight anybody because I'm a fighter.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and his answer was, if I didn't feel I was ready, I wouldn't have signed.
Oh, no, his management pushed him into that, and of course the money.
Anyway, I felt like, you know what, his management looked at, we've had you on for quite some time. There's an investment. See, and that's the thing, too, is that folks don't understand that some fighters have to take fights because of the fact is there's money being dropped in
right.
guys. So they got to try to make back whatever they can. And this was, to me, was almost like a buyout finally.
It was like a Tyrell Biggs, Mike Tyson. They cashed out almost.
They cashed out. They needed to make back what they put in, and that's what they got. And it's exactly what they got. I think, though.
And Virgil Hunter knew. And I could look at Virgil Hunter. I mean, great trainer, but being in boxing, I've been around at 30. You know when your fight is overmatched. And you know, I don't care what kind of training camp that you've had, you know when this isn't a good fight for you.
I've interviewed Virgil a few times, you know, and some of the language that he used was interesting. Like, you know, it was like, we got a good shot at this, as opposed to, we've got this.
Exactly.
Like, you know, when I'm talking like an Andre Ward fight, we got this. And Right,
exactly.
And like, well, you know, he's got the skills, and, you know, I wouldn't be surprised. That was the phrase. I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's not confidence. That's just kind of like, well,
exactly, man.
You know,
they
if he could go to the gym, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he did all right. But, you know, it's like when you put
well,
gym
yeah.
on.
That's how fighters get. That's how young fighters get wrong. That's how young fighters. And you guys mentioned Overcar. I remember the same thing happened to Over at 17 years old. They ruined him. I mean, it just happens. They push him.
He left
Emmanuel Stewart.
He was on a fast track, and he left Emmanuel Stewart, and went under the reins of Don King. That's how I understand it, and kind of did it to himself. Kind of. Took himself out of that protective cocoon where he could have been moved great and instead went a different way.
Yeah, because
you know,
he went for the money.
He started believing everything around. Most fighters, you know, some have to do that to an extent, but then there's that thing where you see them kind of lift off from, like I said, the protective cocoon of who got you to the party, and everybody else says, "Nah, man, you don't need this guy. You need this guy." And you know, this is a better deal, and, you know, be represented, and you know, by us, and all of a sudden it isn't. I think that's what happened with Oba. With Mike, I don't know if it's necessarily – this sounds so evil when you say, you know, it's a cash out, and they knew he was going to get killed.
Well, I don't think they knew that he would get killed. They said it was a good opportunity, but, I mean,
I didn't think
they thought he was going to be really competitive. I mean, I just don't believe that because the guy, like I said, the ring walk.
But I understand all that, and I totally agree with you. But let's say they don't do the fight for a year, but that's the goal, is to get Matisse. Who would you put him in with to build towards Matisse? Or do you think that – I don't think there's anybody you could really put him in with that's ever going to really prepare him for Matisse. He's just not as good a fighter as Matisse, in my opinion. And like Steve pointed out, can't really take a punch all that great. So to me
– Well, he didn't really get a chance because he had what we called that nervous energy. He was fighting off nervous energy. He really wasn't even thinking.
Well, there's nothing that anybody could do about that. And look at the fights that he's had. Herrera, the other fight that he lost.
Lopez.
And,
you know.
But then he came back on a streak of winning, had some good fights, and, yeah, it's a jump up in class. But he's already kind of been to the mountaintop, lost, rebuilt. And if this guy isn't a good matchup for you, I don't know who is. I mean, as good as Matisse is, and as well as he punches and he's kind of subtle, a guy like Mike Dallas, if he's the shit – should be able to outbox Lucas Matisse and keep him turning because his feet are kind of slow and it's a very basic attack. You should be able to jab and move and use all those things, but he's probably never going to be that guy. So to me, take your shot. And if you win, you win. If you don't, he's probably never.
It's a hard thing. If you know what's difficult about this is that he's never going to be that guy, but he has the guy that could have guided him through it. And I think that's why one of the reasons why they took that fight is because Virgil has the eye to see things and realize we could capitalize on this. But here's the thing. It's almost like having the brain, but you need the arms to function. And that's what Mike Dallas is. He's those arms. He just wasn't able to function. The brain was there to figure out the flaws that Matisse has, but their arms weren't able to perform to grab it. That was the biggest problem. You know,
and that was his first fight with Virgil, right? That's the and
no,
then again,
no,
I
no,
mean,
no. This is their fourth. That's what I'm saying.
The fourth fight, okay.
That's what I mean. They know what they have. So it's either he gets past this, and it's a good style matchup, and it's a
I didn't know it was a fourth fight. So that makes it even more. If that was the fourth fight, that even makes me think even more that hey, man, this guy, we got to see what he got. They put him out there to see, we got to really see what we have, and
found out. You've rebuilt. I think you've won three in a row. You know, I think they lost one together the first fight, and then they won. And people argued that he won the fight, and then they did three more. And
right.
You know,
okay. Yeah, I didn't. Okay.
That kind of changes everything.
I didn't know it was poor because the way they were talking, it was like, dang, I was like, dang, if he just got with this guy, why would they take such a tough fight? But since he had three more, even still, I mean, he's probably as gone as far as he can go for right now. He'll just have to step back and maybe go back to ESPN or something like that. And,
yeah.
I mean, it's not unthinkable that he can't come back because he does have skills. But I think the moment.
Look at John Molina Jr. I mean, can you think of a worse loss last year? Other than Pacquiao face first in a fight of the year candidate. I mean, the guy is a multimillionaire, but John Molina. And that's to me was the worst loss of last year because he, you know, he crouched in the corner and kind of looked like he didn't know what to do. And his great opportunity was over before it began. That's brutal.
Yeah,
and look at him this year. Boom. Knockout.
A lot of times that happens to fighters when they get to that moment. And they can't even explain it. And they don't even know. I mean, I've been in positions where four prominent amateurs who, you know, were rated one and two in the world. And all of a sudden, I mean, it hits you all of a sudden and you're not thinking. I mean, you get caught in the moment.
Absolutely.
And that's what separates the number one guys from the number two. And I tell people that gap between the champion and, you know, the two and three contender is so small. Because there's only a small, small gap that divides the champions from the contenders. People don't realize that. But in boxing, it's a small gap. And some fighters just can't break through that gap. You know, either it's the trainer, or it's the fighter's, you know, his mental capacity. Some fighters just cannot get past that. But I really felt bad for Dallas because I looked at him walking to the ring, and it didn't look to me as a person with confidence. It looked at it to me as a person coming into a moment that was kind of got him as he walked to the ring. And then once he got in the ring, I looked at his movements. He was very, very nervous, very nervous. If he was more relaxed, he probably wouldn't have been able to take that punch.
And he fought nervous, and that's what really cost him the fight.
You can't do that with a puncher, brother.
I got to put you on hold because we're going to be getting our first guest.
Go ahead and get everybody. I'm listening, brother. Go ahead.
Thank you, man. I appreciate your call. Stay on hold.
Hey, thanks.
We're going to be getting our first guest with us. And it's going to be Jose Hernandez, who had a fight on ESPN. And Gabriel's telling me he's on right now, but I don't see the number.
No, I'm waiting for him to kind of disconnecting it all. So Joel Diaz Jr. will be calling in sometime, I believe, 5:45. Yeah.
5:45, and then we got Lamont Peterson at 6 o'clock. And then we had at 6:45, we got Steve Cunningham, who is supposed to be fighting Tyson Fury, who we had on about, I believe, like 2 weeks ago here on Leaving the Ring Radio and stuff. My vacation is over. I'm back at work, man. I'm working about 2 hours away from my home. So but it's been crazy. That's why I haven't been so active here on Twitter and updating the site. I've been doing it late at night because I wake up like at midnight, at 1 in the morning sometimes. I get up, man. It's kind of weird. I have insomnia really bad. It sucks. You know, I never had insomnia. Now that I have it, it kills me. You know, I wake up in the middle of the night. I get up. I walk around. I pace. I'm like an old man now. You know, all that's missing, Gabriel, is for me to have some little bunny slippers and a pink robe and walk
out.
Yeah, and walk to the front and look for some newspaper or something. I don't know. You know, it's crazy. Just text me though the number, the first three.
So I'm waiting on it.
Area code that he's going to be calling.
We're going to call him in. I'm just waiting on that number right now, and then it's my back thing.
Mike gets back on the road, gets back on his feet, goes back to that drawing board. Because you know what? Even though with this major knockout and leavingtheringgmail.com, I always appreciate a lot of the listeners that email and love chopping it up boxing, man. It's the agenda. It's just to talk about boxing. You know, that's the one thing I like to talk about. I don't like getting involved with all the other crap that's out there. And one of the things they were mentioning was what does this tell us about Virgil Hunter? And my answer was nothing. Just because a trainer is successful with one guy, and I think a lot of people forget this, it really depends on the chemistry between a fighter and a trainer and what the fighter can do with the suggestions and directions a trainer offers. You know, and I'll go back again, is being with Virgil Hunter with four or five fights and being in the Bay for quite some time and having great sparring partners. Let's not forget, he's got a good realm of fighters he was working off and being in the great and being prepared, having preparations leading into this Matisse fight. But when you got a puncher and a guy that can just turn the lights off, no matter what you bring, sometimes just doesn't matter. It could take away any gift. It could take away any team that's behind you. It could take away any roadwork you put in to be prepared. All that can be dismissed by one big punch.
Yeah, and this guy, you know, as we're waiting here for the number, Jose Hernandez, sometimes it's like you just keep chopping. Like that fight, man, Tony Luiz fight. Tony Lewis, actually. It looks like it should be Luis, but he insists on being called Lewis. God, man, these two guys just got in a phone booth, started digging at each other's bodies, coming upstairs. I mean, it was just a war of attrition. Wonderful ebb and flow through the whole thing. Both guys just giving as good as they got, but I really like the length of Hernandez. He just seemed to kind of keep Luis out there, or Lewis out there, and finally just struck gold late in the fight. And you know, drops in the left hook, comes back to the right. I mean, it was just an unbelievable fight. And these guys, you know, to me, it's a question of professionalism. You know, a guy being in shape, always ready to go. He's got a lot of experience. I mean, the names on his list. I mean, he lost early to Sharif Bulgari, but you know, he's been in there with Luis Ramos Jr., Michael Perez, Mickey Bay. I think his first loss, Matt Remillard. Early on to be facing a guy like that. I'm very interested to see hear his background and just kind of figure out where he came from. But a guy like that, it's you know, you're in a fight and it's like, yeah, I'm here against the prospect and I'm kind of on his turf. But he showed up in shape and ready to go and ready to be a warrior. And good things happen, man. Like it could be one punch, like with, you know, Matisse. Obviously had a great camp and was just ready for the moment when it presented itself, you know, Gennady Irene, or it could be a guy like Jose Hernandez against Tony Lewis, you know, and he had to take all night, but finally chopped the tree down and drops the guy with two rounds to go.
I agree. I do agree on that. Fight fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598. We're going to patch another fight fan here while we're waiting for Jose Hernandez to call in and speak to us here on the radio and get his take about his win over Tony Luis or Lewis, wherever you want to call him. I know he insists on being called Lewis, but we're going to call him Luis here. Let's go with area code 860. You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind?
Hey, what's up, guys? It's CT. How you
CT,
doing?
What's up, brother? How you doing, man?
What's up,
pretty
CT?
Good. What's up, man? I just think that, you know, to the 140-pound weight class, this is pretty scary. I mean, when you usually think about power punchers, you know, people think about certain fighters like Mayorga, Rios, Maidana, you know, people who come straight ahead and throw bombs. This guy, you know, the way he set up that pullback straight right hand, you know, Floyd Mayweather does it a lot, but this guy did it with power. You know, that pullback counter right cross is just, was perfect, and the way he punches is like just dropped him so easily on his face. It's very scary. I bet you a lot of the 140-pound fighters are like, holy shit, you know. I know Zab Judah is like, you know, the way he jumps out of his seat.
Oh, yeah.
He's got power.
Zab's been there.
Yeah, he's still. He's a skilled power puncher. Now, I think that's pretty scary for the 140-pound weight class. It's about time for these guys to give this guy his shot. You know, he's paid his dues. He's working his way up the ladder. I think, to me, one of his toughest challenges was his last fight against Oluzagan. I think that stylistic matchup is very hard to beat. You know, Oluzagan being, you know, his defense, his speed, his southpaw, and his combinations, the way he was throwing at Matisse, I thought it was a pretty good fight. I think that would have been, you know, a tough matchup for Matisse, which it was to an extent, but this guy definitely has some pretty, you know, very, very good punching power, and it's about time for these guys, you know, give this guy a shot. He's going to have to keep knocking these guys out and knocking on the door to get his title shot again. I think, you know, I would love to see him. If he can't get the Garcia fight, I would love to see him fight the winner out of Alvarado and Rios. I think, especially if it's Rios again, if he ever fought Matisse, I don't know if I could take 12 rounds of that. Or even the winner out of Holt and Peterson. I think Peterson, especially if Peterson wins, him against Matisse will be a challenging fight because I think Peterson's very underrated. I think he's a very good boxer.
I think so too. You know what? Let's just rewind that just for a second. Danny Garcia, I don't know why so many folks are kind of dismissing what Danny's done, but when we talk about power punchers at 140, there's a lot of them. Danny, you got to put Danny in that category. This guy has a good right hand. He has a lot of pop in that right hand, you know. Matisse and him, that's a hell of a fight. It's a really good fight. We haven't really seen Danny Garcia get shook up. We haven't seen him in a position where he's in retrieving mode. He's a guy that brings a punch. He's a guy that can bore you a little bit. But I think that boring stage is kind of gone and passed just because of the fact that he was a kid trying to find himself. Now that he's a champion, I think the confidence built has just leaped. It's jumped up to the next stage where now we can more or less see a much more refined, much more better, a much more confident, and a guy that really believes in what he can produce and what he could do in the ring. Matisse is a guy that just knows this full confidence. I think with the knockout two alone, it's boosted himself just a bit more, where in some cases, when you have a sensational knockout like that and you believe in that power, it could kind of diminish what you've been working on in the past. I don't know if you agree on that, Gabriel, but I've seen that, and I'm pretty sure, CT, you've witnessed this, where we've seen fighters, they have a great sensational win over so-and-so, and then they believe in that power so much because the fans and the media are, they're praising it and they're loving it, that fighters end up falling in love with their power so much that they forget about the rest of the other things that come along behind that.
Yeah, I agree. That happens with a lot of heart.
Well, it happens too as you move up in weight and start to slow down, But yeah, you can get caught in that mode. I'm going to land that one shot. I don't see either one of those guys doing that. I mean, Matisse, he is what he is. I think he's kind of upped his boxing IQ, or his skills have kind of caught up with his natural boxing IQ as he's moved along. I mean, he was with the Sarmientos for a minute. He kind of moved back on to his own thing. I think after Gabby left, that's when he split. And for whatever reason, I don't know, maybe it's just easier for him to train down there closer to home. But he's really coming into his own, And Golovkin, both these guys, they're not exactly puzzles. Even Garcia, you look at we're looking at all the power punchers. He's not, these guys aren't puzzles. But what punchers really ever were, Was Mike Tyson really a mystery? You had to, harness your own fear and stick a stiff 1-2 in his face and step around him and be able to deal with the first 3-4 round onslaught, and then you're kind of in business. It's not really a mystery. I think you can kind of do that with all of these guys. The tall puncher, guy coming downhill. Even Amir Khan, he's kind of got some of the skills to be successful against these guys. He keeps thinking he's one of them when he's something else, That's his problem. This could be interesting, seeing them all move up. I'd love to see Broner just, drop by helicopter into a ring that contained one of these guys.
I think that's one of the major decisions why he decided to stay at 135 and not come up for a minute. I don't blame him. I don't blame him, It could be a little bit too soon. Regardless of what he did to DeMarco, there's still a learning curve for him. I think that a lot of times we get memorized by the boxing skills. We get, bedazzled what they can do. And we kind of forget that there's still room to grow. There's still room to figure out. That's the beauty about boxing. And when I get in deep conversations with people that are not boxing fans, they're football fans, baseball fans, and we talk about boxing, a lot of people are just so misled about what the sport is really all about. They always think that it's two guys going in and just beating the crap out of themselves. They don't understand styles. They don't understand that there's a craft. They don't understand there's a science behind it. They don't understand the difficultness of being a fighter. It could just take a fraction of something to catch somebody. It could be a minor inch of a step just to get the perfect punch, to learn how to physically take away somebody's best arsenal to physically break down another man. You know, those are the things I don't think a lot of folks have an understanding on. And that's what I think, that's what the appreciation that we have for this sport, and we have an understanding for this sport.
Yeah, if I could just add one more thing before I get off the air. I commend Admiral Mares, what I just read. I don't know if it's 100% true, but I heard he's moving up in weight. And, you know, I'm glad that he's doing that. I mean, he can't get the fight that he wants. This guy doesn't want a tournament. I mean, give him some respect and give him these big fights that he wants. I'm glad he's moving up in weight. I mean, it's not fair to him, but, you know, he's moving up, and hopefully he'll get some good fights up in featherweight division.
You know what? I agree with you 100%, but at the same time, it sucks. It sucks for fight fans, you know. And this is the thing. 2 years ago, I was hooting and hollering about this, and I had a lot of fight fans jumping all down my neck, you know, about, oh, you got to give them a break. You got to, you know, for Dornier, you got to do this, you got to do that. And at some point, you got to stop pointing blame to the promoters. You got to start pointing blame to the fighters, you know.
I don't understand, though. I think the Rigondeaux fight is a more dangerous fight.
It is a dangerous fight, but I think a lot of...
Why is everybody complaining?
This is a fight that... Abner Morris, come on, let's be honest. Abner Morris in this fight, it's a big fight. It's a much bigger fight, in my opinion, than
Rigondeaux. I like dangerous fights.
It's being dangerous.
I mean, I think Abner's got a shot. I'm not going to... You know, I think it's... His skill and everything, we could break down the fight. I think he's definitely got a shot. He deserves his respect. But boxing fans are so damn fickle. Rigondeaux, I'll tell you what, they make that fight, I'm picking Rigondeaux to win, probably by late knockout.
I don't know. I don't know if I can go that far to say something like that. I mean, Abner Morris, to me, has cleaned out a division. What has Rigondeaux done? He wasn't no tournament.
It isn't about what have you done or deserve or anything. It's about styles. I think he has a style to knock Nonito Donaire out cold.
Wow, I don't know, Gabriel.
I can't say the same thing for Abner Morris. I don't think there's any danger of Abner Morris, other than maybe to the body, of knocking out Nonito Donaire. Maybe TKOing him, breaking him down late, yes.
To me, those are stiff pick fights.
Rigo is the one that can do that. It's a sexier fight, I really do. I know people think that Rigo's boring or this and that. He's a really mean dude. From what I understand, with a chip on his shoulder, that knows knocking Nonito Donaire out is the key to the kingdom. I'm telling you, it's a better fight.
I think Donaire knocks Morris out, but I think Rigondeaux, the way his timing on his counter punches is like unbelievable. He just split timing, you know, counter punches people, and I think he'll give Donaire a lot of trouble.
I disagree. I don't see. You know what? What I've seen of Morris is a guy that's been able to figure out fighter after fighter after fighter. I think he figures out Dornier, but I still think it's a pick-em fight. With Rigondeaux, he's explosive, but I haven't seen him be in a fight where he has to figure out a guy. And that, to me, leaves a lot of questions. That's my opinion.
He'd have to figure out Dornier. I'm telling you. I mean, this is a guy with what, you know, how many go-rounds in the Olympics? And people are like, what has he done? Well, I mean, as a pro, okay, I'll give you that. But, you know, like, he's only got 11 fights. He's got a belt. He picked it up in his sixth fight. I mean, he's defended it.
To be honest, Rico Ramos, I mean, come on. I mean, that's...
He's got a belt. So the belts matter. I mean, not everybody gets one. Look at Ishae Smith, still chasing a belt after all these years. They're not easy to get. And he earned that belt. He took Ramos out, you know, like a G. And, you know, yeah, his next fight, he didn't look so great. But, I mean, people always want this perfect guy that can take a shot.
I'm sorry. I don't know. I think a belt is, to me, still just – it's not a big deal. Okay, Issa Smith hasn't got a belt because he's just not – you know, he's not – he wasn't connected to the right people in the beginning. Now he's starting to get connected to the right folks. But at the time, it just wasn't there. Rigondeaux just he connected with the right folks. He got his belt, but I still sit back and have got to wonder. I mean, we've criticized on Lee.
It's not like Shumanov, where he got a belt and then he's just kind of in his own universe and not really doing anything. I mean, Rigo's trying to fight the best guy in the division.
I agree with you on that one. He's trying to fight the best guys in the division, but we have criticized guys for getting a belt, and guess what? We've called them prospects. What about? And I'm not saying that Regan
Rigo's in a totally different category than, say, an Andre Berto or a Canelo. He's got almost 400 amateur fights.
He hasn't proven, you know, Abner Martin.
We always talk about how, you know, the big guy's got the little guy get a shot. Here we go. I think maybe the little guy, to your credit, is Morris, and I agree with you. Like, let him, join with another superstar and let us do that. But
now,
you know, it's funny how Golden Boy acts like they're the best promoter in the world, and yet they desperately need a fighter from the real best promoter in the world in order to make their guy a superstar. It's kind of funny.
It is funny. But, you know, going back with my point is when we talk about – like you said, the word deserve, just forget about that. But the guy that's had more accomplished right now in the division, in their weight class, is Abner Morris. Shouldn't he not have the opportunity at Dornier? You know, if anybody wants to get that, go to that next level the way Rigondeaux wants, it should be Abner Morris. But if Rigondeaux is going to get it here, I'm not going to complain about it. I'd love to see the fight. You know, I think it would be a great fight. But at the same time, I'm with the fans when we're saying enough's enough. Let's see the Abner Morris and Nonito Dornier. Whatever I can get first, it's I'll get it. CT, thanks for calling in, brother. We're going to put you back on hold.
That's funny.
Thank you.
Do we have a window in the show that we can move Jose Hernandez to?
We certainly do. We can put him on as soon as we get Lamont Peterson on with us here on Leaving the Ring. We have Lamont coming on at 6 o'clock, and I don't know how long that's going to be. It shouldn't be that long, and we could throw him in before we get Steve Cunningham here on Leaving the Ring, if that'll work.
I'm not just being contrarian, Linus. It's a better fight. It's a more dangerous fight. Bottom line, I mean, I know you guys want to see it, but just because you want to see it doesn't mean that you're right. And I understand the reasons for Morris. VADA testing has nothing to do with it. That is, you know, I think it's something that Nonito does that all fighters should do. It doesn't really color everything for me. I think if you're talking fighter of the year, which I didn't really pick one, but if I had to, it would be Dornier because he's showing what a champion should do. He's showing a transparency.
We mean you have talked about that off the air. Remember,
you know,
that? We had a great conversation about that. And
he also fought four times, which a lot of champions could learn from. I mean, people look at the breakdown of the thing. You know, every single fight, it may not have been meaningless or meaningful if it was a showcase, but he fought four times. I mean, that's giving to the sport. That's giving your body to the sport so that the people are entertained and the division moves. I understand people really want this Morris fight. I think they'll eventually get it, but they're not going to get it.
It's not going to be at this weight, though. It's going to be at a much heavier weight. And you know what? Just to throw out there about the whole fight of the year, and because, you know, a lot of times I get people like, "Oh, you guys always agree with each other." That's not. You know what's funny? It's not even true. That just tells me you don't listen to this show very often. We don't always agree on a lot of stuff, you know. We almost play like devil's advocate, you know, about what would happen, what should happen and stuff. And that fight of the year, when we had that conversation, and remember, we were talking about that and about doing our December, our last show, doing those, you know, what we've done in the past, and we both came up with, we're not going to do that anymore. We're not going to do this whole fight of the year, fight, you know, round, et cetera, because we just didn't want to do that. And the whole fight of the year, when you had asked me, I'm pretty sure you remember the conversation. Remember I told you, I was like, I don't even really have a fight of the year. And when you mentioned Nonito, and I told you, I don't even think he's a fight of the year. And you gave me your case of why, and I gave you mine. I was like, well, I just don't think that was enough to name one guy fighter of the year.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I don't really, you know, like I said, I don't give a
and
award,
people are
going to
go,
really they're
always been a Nonito hater.
but the bottom line, is what's funny is that we've criticized Nonito's, I think we've been very openly critical, me in particular, of his, I've been saying fight Rigo for a while. Like, you know, they were bitching about being boring, he didn't sell, this and that. I mean, Nonito's not the biggest draw on the planet. To me, it's just a more dangerous fight. It always has been. I think he's the most intelligent guy in the division. And I'm talking about Rigo.
Rigondeaux. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I like Morris, you know. He's a good guy. I'd like to see him make a lot of money. But it's not going to happen. It's not killing boxing.
No, it's not going to happen.
You know,
no,
it's not like it's
not going to happen.
It's not like it's Floyd and Pacquiao, where, you got your barber and everybody and their brother. You know, I had the guy at the smoke shop and people,
right.
You know, accountants. And this is when I was still working at the hotel when it first when they were first talking about the fight. It was like probably my last few months of that job. And everybody and their brother, dude from marketing, you know, women always asking, talking about the fight. When's it going to happen? When's it going to happen? I haven't heard anybody other than boxing fans go crazy about Donaire versus Morris. They're small guys. Nobody's that crazy about it. It's not some cultural event that we're losing out on. I think it'll be fun. It definitely could be the next.
But it's
know,
a cultural
Pacquiao.
Event for us, though.
Right.
As boxing fans, it is a cultural event for us. Fight fans, you want to call in, 347-215-7598. We're going to talk a little bit right now, pretty soon, we're going to talk about Soto Corras, his win. And
it's
surprise.
Not a travesty. Linus, just move on. This is not going to happen. And see you at 126, my friend. That's probably what the fight will happen. Let it go.
Let's get another fight fan on here before we get our next call in from Joel Diaz is going to be calling in right now, 6:45. So let's get patiently waiting. Area code 724. You're on live right now and Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind, brother?
I was just listening in, guys. That's all.
Hey, man. Thanks. I appreciate it, brother. Stay on.
Thanks, man. Thank you so much.
Yep.
Let's go with area code 951. You're on live right now with Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind?
No, I'm listening, fellas. Love the show.
Oh, man. Thank you, brother. Appreciate it, man, the support.
Yeah. All right.
Yorkies Gamboa in some heat. He's in some heat. You know, I emailed SMS Promotions, trying to get some feedback. Find out whether or not they're going to release a press release, because my question was, what happens to the contract right now? What's the repercussions of Gamboa being on that East Coast Balco, is what it's being called right now, on that list? And they haven't got back to me, which is kind of expected. I'm pretty sure they're getting, you know, from every corner and every direction right now, asked a million questions, because my letter to them was pretty length. It had some length to it and some meat. I was asking some serious questions about what's going to happen as them being promoters of Yorki. Is 50 Cent going to have something to be said about it? Is it going to have a representative? What happens on to the contract that they had on together? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Your thoughts, Gabriel, about the whole situation and what you think should happen to Mr. Gamboa right now?
Let's check if Joel might be in queue. Geez, that's a big. I've just got a text. I think he is.
He is in queue and stuff. We'll get back to that question there.
That big setup. Yeah, I do have answers.
Let's go with Joel Diaz Jr. What's up, brother? You're on live right now with us on Leaving the Ring.
How's it going, guys? How's it going?
Good, man. It's always fun to have you on. You've been on Leaving the Ring.
What's up, man?
Time.
Yeah, man. You guys are like a family now. So
I know
what I'm saying.
And we haven't seen you in a while, man. You've been like that long lost member of the family, up in the mountains in a cabin training. Talk to us about what you've been up to, man.
Just training, just staying committed to this, man. You know. Actually, I haven't fought. You guys haven't heard from me. You guys haven't seen me fight or nothing since my last fight on August. And after that last fight on August, actually, 2 weeks later, I was in the gym, hopefully getting a fight. You know, but I mean, you know the promotions and all that. You know, everybody goes through it. So, I mean, I just been patiently waiting. You know, and here we are again. We're back. To leave it in the ring, you know. So we'll fight it next week already, and here I am again.
Well, you've been putting it in the gym. What's that like? You know, you've been up there for a while, and
yeah, man, you're telling me.
Like how many months have you been up there? And what's it like watching camps roll in and camps roll out, and you watch on the TV all their fights, and you're like, what's going on?
That's actually what goes through my mind. You know, dang, when am I gonna get my turn? You know, I actually haven't been in the ring for 6 months, and I just see camps just come in, go out, come in, go out. You know, it gets packed. It doesn't, and I just I'm just waiting for my moment, you know. And here it is, like I said, and we're more than ready. We're ready to rock and roll, you know.
Talk to me about. I mean, you know, it was interesting. I was watching your photos there. You know, all I ever get to see of you is kind of photos, and I haven't had a chance to go. Steve always goes up to see Triple G on the media days. I'll be up at the next one, so you'll probably be there. But your body, man, you seem to be super ripped compared to the last time I saw you. And you're kind of in that time where your body's still kind of making changes. You're a young guy. Were you 20? You know, so talk to me about that. Like what you've gone through, just going through training over and over again. Do you start and stop and kind of let yourself heal and then begin again? Talk to me about that process.
I actually just go with the flow, man. Just as days go by, Abel got a hell of a has a hell of a training system for me, you know. Well, for the camp, and I mean, you see it and I see it. My body is changing. I'm 20 years old. I'm still young, you know, and I'm pretty sure my body's gonna continue to change. And you know, it's just the work method, man. It's just the work method, and I just like to stay put in this work method, you know. I just like to see my body change, you know.
Hey, let me ask you this, because you're a guy that I've always been stoked about. I mean, any chance that I get to have a chance to watch you. You always bring it. Let's go back to last year. You were like in one of the best fights out there with Guy Robb, and I always bring this every time you come on. This is a fight, dude, I think it's going to be stuck with you for the rest of your life here. But with that fight alone, what do you think you've learned, and do you feel that you've changed as a fighter since that beginning, which was in January too? That fight was in January. Do you think there's been a big change? Do you think you're a much different fighter from back then?
Yeah, man. I think I'm a much different fighter, actually. For one, it was on TV, so all of my opponents and everybody that's raising that 130 got to see it, you know. So, I mean, we don't want to go with the basic. We don't want to go with the same routine, you know. We want to mix it up, and I learned a lot from that fight, actually. It was an 8-round fight. Now I moved up to 10 rounds, and now I know how to just pace myself, you know, just time myself, choose my punches, use the jab now, what everybody been telling me that I have to be using now. That opens all the doors. So yeah, man, I've been learning a lot from that fight. I learned a lot from that fight training here with Abel Sanchez.
You put in some rounds last year. I mean, you fought what, 5 times. You did take that long break, but I mean, it's not like you didn't fight. You fought 5 times. It was interesting. They took kind of some chances with you, putting in with Yogi Herrera, who, you know, people look at it and say, oh, 14 losses, but they put you in guys with like double your experience. The next one I thought was really curious was Emmanuel Lucero, and you blew through both those guys in 4 and 5 rounds respectively. Was it off of that Guy Robb stuff, or is there something else? I mean, all the training sparring that you're doing up there? Domination.
Hello? You guys are kind of like cutting off. Hello? Hello?
Uh-oh. Can you hear us?
Yeah.
Can you hear
Hello?
Us, brother? Yeah.
Yeah, I can hear you. Okay. I didn't really get that last part. I'm sorry about that.
Just with those 5 fights, and that you were fighting guys with like double your experience in Lucero and Herrera, and you blew through them. Was it what you learned from the Guy Robb fight, or was this a combination of the where you're training now?
I think it's both. You know, it's a combination of both. Actually, they did put me up against challenge to test my skills. You know, against people that against fighters that actually fought the top dogs that are in the ring now, and I think I only learned from it. You know, to be the best, you got to fight the best, and that's what I want to do this year. I want to fight the best, and I actually want to be the best. You know,
when you had that fight with Guy Robb, and you mentioned it was on, you know, television, was on, and it was, and there were a lot of folks were able to witness and watch. Immediately after that. You didn't get back. You know what I mean? It kind of went the opposite direction. Was that, being a young fighter, was that difficult for you to understand what your promoter was trying to do? Because I actually kind of agreed what he was trying to do was you were in a really tough fight. It was a back-and-forth war. They could have capitalized on that and put you on in other big, hard fights. But there was been a bit of strong possibility they could have destroyed you career-wise. But instead, they saw what they witnessed, and they did to just let you build off of it, continue to grow. Was that difficult for you? You understand the position they were in, the direction they wanted to go with you?
I think it was a good direction. You know, it was a tough fight, that Guy Raw fight, and just for me to fight, really close to that fight. After there, it was hello?
Yeah, we're listening.
Oh shit! I thought. Oh my bad.
No, it's cool, man.
I'm sorry.
You're on the internet. You're all right.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry about that. After that guy lost, like, you know, I think it was all right choice for me to fight, but you know, not to put me in that with another tough opponent, because I mean, after a tough fight, you know, I mean, we're not. As boxers, we're not machines, you know. We need to heal. We need to rest, you know. And I think it was an all right decision for my promotions, Boxing 360, to hand me that fight. You know, it could have been a tougher fight, but I mean, I made it easy, and after that, you know, that's when the healing process was over, right? You know.
Tell us a little bit about your next fight that's coming up, man. What are we in store for? What are we looking for in this next fight?
A new Joel Diaz. Well, you know, not a Guy Raw Joel Diaz. You know, this guy, Tyler is actually a little taller than me, about what, 5'10", 5'11", and he's southpaw as well. A lot of people say that southpaws are a big trouble, you know, but I mean, I think it's just the way that you're training, you know. Abel Sanchez has been giving me a lot of tips on fighting the southpaw. And like I said, he's taller than me, so we're gonna want to work in the inside as much as we could, and just avoid that right foot that he stays in front of us, you know. Work around that and just try not to get caught with his long range, you know. So. Hopefully everything goes good.
Yeah. It's interesting. You know, I mean, he, if I had to like separate you two guys, it's the knockouts. And cause he's got some rounds, you know, he's got 49 rounds. You've got 29 rounds. He's got more fights, like two fights more, but it's almost the difference. It's like when they put you in with Lucero and, you know, that guy, the other guy, that kind of doubled your experience, Herrera, you stopped them. When he's put in with level guys like that, he goes the distance with them. And when you were put in with your undefeated guy, Guy Raw, you stopped him. When he went with an undefeated guy, he went the distance. I think that's kind of interesting. But he's, you know, it's going to be an interesting fight. I mean, because he's obviously you're heading into his territory.
I'm gonna invade his backyard, actually, you know.
Yeah, just step right up on his porch and make yourself at home. Do you feel like you gotta really knock him out and be spectacular? I mean, it is what it is, right?
Yeah, it is what it is, man. If we could go with the knockout, I mean, that'd be really good, you know. If we could stop him in the early rounds, middle rounds, you know, that'd be cool. But if we can, you know, we're more than ready to go to go the distance, you know, condition wise and fighting wise and everything, you know, just boxing wise, not brawling wise, you know. I mean, if it comes down to that, then we'll brawl, but mostly boxing and pacing ourselves. And
as a fight fan, we're hoping it comes down to that, brother.
doesn't everybody want to see that, you know?
Yeah, that's true. That's the truth, you know. I want to see people miss and slick defense. No, not really. No, I want to see a brawl. I want to see you come down off the mountain and get crazy, you know.
Hey, I've been up here, man. I've just been up here, and I'm stoked just to get off the mountain, you know. So, it's going to be good.
I mean, I don't mind it up here. You know, I don't mind it up here. I mean, everybody.
Hey, you're not growing a beard or anything like that, right, brother?
Nah, man, I don't even grow. I don't even grow beards, man. It just peach fuzz.
You got it.
That's great.
Yeah, man. I mean, if I could, you know, I don't even get haircuts out here because I'm, you know, I don't trust nobody with my hair, you know. So my hair just gets into an afro, and then.
So in other words, so are people stopping you, asking you if you're on Alfredo Angulo? You know, like, hey, Alfredo.
Yeah, nah, man. I'm not that close. That guy looks like a caveman, but he fights like a warrior, man. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. What's the furthest you've ever gone to fight, like distance that you've traveled?
Probably just that guy Rob fight, actually. Seventh rounds. That's pretty much it.
No, but I mean, as far as you know, you're going over to Canada. Have you gone further than that to get into a fight?
No,
with
I haven't.
Somebody?
That's actually this is actually my furthest fight out in Canada. So I'm actually kind of looking forward to it. You know, to go to another spot. You know, other than the U.S. So. I'm actually looking forward to it, you know?
Yeah. Well, you've been branching out, too. I mean, the last few fights, West Virginia, you know, head up to Tacoma, then out to Jersey. You've been out to Chicago.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you've branched out. I mean, I think it's time, you know? I'm excited for you, man.
Thanks, man. Thanks, man. I mean, like I tell my promoter and I tell my manager, you know, man, send me anywhere. I'm not going to back down, you know? I stay up here for a reason, you know, just committed to one thing, and boxing is what it is, and this is what I want to do. I want to become a champion, and it's my dream, you know, and they say, a lot of people say dreams come true, and I'm pushing forward to that.
Absolutely, man.
Let me ask you this one last thing. I'm sorry, I know we're going to wrap, Dave, but you've been up there a long time. And you're traveling to Canada. I mean, you got an experienced guy with Abel Sanchez. Do you guys plan for all that? Have you taken that into account that you've been up there training and acclimated to that environment, and now you got to go into another environment? Do you guys work on that or talk about that?
We talk about it. We talk about it, but kind of actually. It's just another. What is it? A country? Yeah. I believe so.
Yeah,
it's just another country, you know. We're just gonna go over there and do what we gotta do and call it a day, you know. So
that's smart. Just not make a big deal out of it, you know.
Right.
You're
it's work. It's work, man. We're not over there to have fun, you know. We're over there. Well, our focus is
take care of business.
Exactly. Take care of business, and you know, and from there and. It goes from there, you know. So we're just worried about one thing, just fighting over there, and you know, pretty much it.
Well, just keep taking care of business, brother, and we'll keep watching and keep cheering you on. Hey, thanks again for coming on, man. It's always fun. It's always a pleasure when you come on Leaving the Ring with us.
All right, man. Appreciate you guys having me on Leaving in the Ring again. But once again, right. I'm pretty sure it's not the last time of the year. I probably
no.
I'll probably talk to you guys for the rest of the year, you know.
Absolutely, brother. All right, I'll talk to you soon.
All right, brother.
All right, man, you guys take care. Thank you.
You too. Good luck.
All right.
Who else? Diaz Jr.'s got a fight coming up. You know, we've been following them for quite some time. We're going to be calling in Lamont Peterson here on Leaving the Ring right now. He's scheduled to be on at 6 o'clock. And talk some boxing with Lamont Peterson. So let's call him in. They just text right now. They're ready for us. So I really like Lamont Peterson as a kid and good fighter. That fight with Guy Raub was just awesome. And I think it was extra.
Hello?
Yeah, Andre, this is Dave Duenas and Gabriel Montoya here on Leaving the Ring.
Hey, Dave.
How you doing, brother?
Good, man. Good. Hey, Dave.
Yeah, is Lamont with you? Or
we're in the gym. Hold on, I'm a patch man. Hold right. on, and then I'm muted, so you can't hear me.
Okay. All right?
Hold on.
And was going back with Joel Diaz Jr. you know, what a prospect. And like I said, we've been following him for quite some time. Just like a lot of other prospects, we've been following their growth. And it was extra special. I was in Las Vegas at the time. And I've told the story a million times here. So if you're a first time, you're catching Leaving the Ring Radio. Ringside, blood squirted all over the place. Hit my face. Photographer asked me, how does it taste? And I said, like war, baby. Like war. So that fight to me was extra special. We got Lamont Peterson that's coming on right now. He is in training camp, getting ready for Holt. And, you know, he's been out for a minute. We'll find out a little bit more, get his take and his part of why, what happened with the VADA testing. But then we're going to roll in about his upcoming fight and seeing him back in the 2013 year.
Speaking of, yeah, I'm excited to talk to him. And speaking of VADA testing, Steve Kim's tweeting this. I can add a little.
Hey, guys. We're back.
All right. Lamont, all right. With us, brother?
Yep.
Man, long time no speak to, man. How you been?
Well, I've been good, man. How you been doing?
Doing really good, really good. It's good to hear that you're back in the ring, getting your training done, and you're going to be back into a big fight, the Timothy Bradley fight. Obviously, the rematch didn't fall through. Let me ask you a little bit before we start rolling into the other stuff. Lamont, with Timothy Bradley, what do you think happened there? And when he turned down the fight, he wasn't intrigued by it, which I heard that he was, but then something just fell apart. What did that do for you, man? I mean, did you think that this was just going to start off to be a bumpy year for you, or what?
Nah, I was just hoping that the opportunity, you know, did happen. But, you know, things happen in boxing. A lot of times you never find out the reason why, but things happen. And you just move on and you keep moving and go, keep going ahead.
Do you think that fight with Timothy Bradley would have been the breaking point for you? I mean, you were out for some time, you know, it was out of your hands. You had the whole VADA testing. Do you think that the Timothy Bradley fight was the right fight for you to get back in the eyes of the fight fans?
I was just, you know, anxious to fight. And at the end of the day, I always look at it like this. And Timothy Bradley will fight again. And, or, you know, whether it's now or later, and I was just hoping that it was now, but it seemed like it's going to be later.
I want to pass it over to my co-host, Gabriel Montoya. Go ahead, brother.
Lamont, thank you for coming on, man. It's been a long time, and I think the last time we talked was I think last March at the press conference here in Los Angeles when you announced the Peterson rematch.
Uh-huh.
Talk to me about how you feel after all this that you've gone through. We don't need to go step by step and do the Oprah Armstrong interview, but I'm just curious, you know, where you feel you're at and how you're dealing with public perception. You know, what do you think that is after all this time? I mean, looking back over the year.
There's no problems with me. You know, people gonna always look at things the way they want to look at things, whether, you know, I tested positive or not. If someone puts it in their head that, you know, I'm a certain way, then to them, I'm going to be a certain way. And there's nothing I can do about it. So at this point, like I've been saying, you know, I told my story, I told my part. If you believe me or not, I can care less at that point because I can't control it. So I just move on with my career.
I never did a one-on-one, but I read your one-on-one with Lem and other ones that you did, and I talked with Barry and your team extensively. What I got out of your story was a guy maybe that was overtrained and was certainly misdiagnosed, at least in my opinion, misdiagnosed with low T, and that was really all it was. It wasn't a guy going with a, you know, a mustache and you're twirling it going, I'm going to cheat and get over. Am I correct? Do you think ultimately, I mean, did you find what was wrong with you health-wise? Do you think you were misdiagnosed and that maybe you, if you'd have gone a little further and gotten more information, that you wouldn't have gone down the road that you did?
I wouldn't say I was misdiagnosed because even after, you know, the fight and after the procedure, you know, it was, you know, still, they still went back down to being low. So,
interesting. Okay.
That's just a problem that I have to deal with. You know, it was the problem was it wasn't like I need to take this because my testosterone is low and so it can make me strong or anything like that. It was for health reasons because at the end of the day, I look at it like this. I've been fighting with if that's the case and it's low and it's always been low, I still been fighting on the top level anyway. So that was not a concern for me, but my health is. You know, at this point, if they say it's something wrong with my brain, forget boxing. I'm done boxing.
Right.
So when, you know, I start doing research and start hearing about the things that can happen, the things that it can cause being this young with, you know, low testosterone, then, of course, I have to make a decision and do what I have to do for my health. And that's all that, you know, I did.
Going forward, I guess, you know, one of the things in, like, Nevada, and you haven't gone and done your licensing hearing, I don't know, have you worked things out with them? And if so, are you going to get, like, a therapeutic use exemption for the use of testosterone? If that's your issue, that your T is, you know, your testosterone, your T level is out of balance.
At this point, it's no need to get an exemption to do anything because, like I said, after the procedure, my testosterone went back down. So it has to be for something else. We're still trying to figure that out. I'm still constantly, you know, monitoring that, constantly getting blood work done to figure out when is it low, when is it high, because sometimes it's normal.
This is not even a question of performance. This is a question of health, right?
Right. This is a question of health. And that's what, you know, at this point, what we're still trying to figure out. But, you know, we tried one procedure. It didn't work. So it's no need to get an exemption for them to get another one because it didn't really work. You know, it was supposed to bring my levels to normal and keep it there, and it didn't. So at this point, it really, you know, that I really don't know. I'm just going to continue to fight on. And the way I always do, I can, you know, it did nothing. The procedure really did nothing for me. And we'll try to figure this thing out and go from there.
And my last
as far as fighting in Vegas, you know, I'm pretty sure I'll get a license in Vegas when I need to. A lot of times when we were, you know, the hearing thing that was about to go on there, they was really asking us, why do we even need to come out? So, you know,
what do you mean?
Like,
what do you mean? They were asking you guys.
The fight was off already.
Yeah, it's not.
Right.
It's not like they called for the hearing.
Gotcha.
We was asking for the hearing. So they was, you know, at that point it was like, what is the need for me even coming out there?
And to clarify
so,
for people,
and we stopped thinking about it like that. Like, you know what? They might be right.
And also, you know, to clarify for people that may not know this, one of your legal team couldn't be there, as I understood it, on the day that you were going to do your hearing, and that was actually the initial reason why you guys pulled out. That's what I was told.
Oh, yeah. The first time, you know, it was the schedule, then we rescheduled it, and then they was, you know, still kind of like, you know, what was the purpose?
Gotcha.
And then,
okay.
You know, things just went from there, just, you know, kind of like just fell downhill from there.
Let me ask you this, and we'll try to get to the boxing stuff because you're a fighter, and I like talking to you about fighting. Golden Boy is really one of the pioneers of this of drug testing in the sport, or independent using an independent source to drug test.
And they were taking a lot of shots at you too.
They mainly take USADA testing. I'm just curious if you're gonna. They did take a lot of shots at you. I'm curious about how you feel about that. But my question is, are you going to continue to do an independent drug testing, and is it going to be USADA?
The way I feel right now is I'll continue to do drug testing. You know, of course, drug testing is not cheap. So with this fight, we're not going to do random drug testing because, like I said, it's not cheap and this fight is pretty much not generating that much money to be doing so.
Right.
Sure.
But, you know, the fights in the future, if they're bigger fights, then you can guarantee that I'm going to do drug testing. And at this point, for my option, you know, the way I look at it, and you just got to look at it for what it is, the way it is, VADA seems like they're the better company when it comes to drug testing. That's what I'm going to want to do.
Wow, that's great. That's great to hear. Lamont, let me ask you. Okay, so you signed with Golden Boy. What made you go in that direction? You know, because when the whole testing thing was about, I mean, they took some major shots at you, and you know. The thinking would be that you wouldn't want to go with them as a promoter. You would have went with somebody else. But your decision was to go with them, which I don't think it was a bad decision. I think it was actually a really great decision. But tell me a little bit, why did you decide to lean towards Golden Boy?
I'm going to tell you this. all the things that were said rolled right off my shoulder. I mean, it was no problem with me because at the end of the day, y'all look at it like this. This is business. You know, I beat their fighter. You know, they thought it was some foul play. They're going to protect their fighter as best they can. So I just looked at it as they protected their fighter. And they was doing whatever they needed to do for their fighter. And that's all I can look at it as.
Now that you're their fighter, you know, now you're that, you're part of their team. What is in store? What is some of the communications between yourself with your team and the Golden Boy of where they're going to move you forward to if you're successful with Holt?
You know, if I'm successful February 22nd, of course, we're trying to make the biggest fights that, you know, we can make. And, you know, right now in my weight class and the weight class above me, you know, Golden Boy have a stock stable right now. And, you know, the top junior welterweights out there. So, right now, you know, we just want to fight the best fighters out there. You have Danny Garcia. You still have the Khan rematch that people want to see. And you have Matisse. And if I decide to move up, they got plenty of 147 pounders, too. So, I know that at this point, if I'm taking care of my business in the ring, starting February 22nd, you know, I can always look forward to, you know, bigger fights.
And there's a lot of...
You know, part of the reason with
right.
signing with them.
Yeah, yeah, and there's a lot of great fights, man, for you out there. Hey, really quick, because I saw this dude at a solo book sale fight, and I got to ask you, who was the man in that hat, man, that everybody was just kind of clamoring over and there was so much suspicion? Do you know who that dude was, dude? Because that was, like, one of the funniest things about the DC fight against Khan.
Do not know him. I saw him once in Colorado, you know, just like, you know, I'm a respectful person. If I see somebody around a little bit, I'll speak. That was it. It didn't go past, hey, how you doing? That was it. Only thing I ever said to him, only time I ever seen him.
But there you go, Garrett.
Did you notice him while you were during the fight at all, or were you too busy hitting Mir Khan?
No, you don't worry about things like that. No. Definitely don't focus on somebody that you don't really know in a crowd.
Let me ask you something, and this is kind of a tough question, but it's something that's kind of bothered me. And this is actually not really so much on you as it is on the DC Commission, and they didn't really call me back. But you basically, you know, through all this, and it's why I've always kind of felt that you didn't do foul play, that you were a guy that was kind of following the advice of doctors and went, wait a minute, you probably should have had more information. I think you should have. But it's not like you're alone in that. A lot of people should have more information. But that you basically said you had a banned substance in you, in this testosterone, during a title fight. And DC, have they said anything to you? Or are they going to discipline you? Or you guys, it was all kind of like a learning experience and we're all just moving forward.
Well, they haven't contacted me at all. You know, they
and you
they
passed
back,
the drug test for full disclosure. You
right,
passed.
And they went to their drug test and they looked over it and the things that they test for, you know, I passed. So at that point, what else could they do?
Yeah.
Sure. I guess chalk it up to learning experience and we move on. I'm sorry to go back after we've kind of moved forward from that. I just remembered the question. Okay, in front of you, you've got a dangerous fighter. And you've got something even more dangerous. You've got Rust from time out of the ring. What do you consider more dangerous heading into this fight? Kendall Holt, the pressure on you to perform up to a certain level, or just fighting the Rust?
There's no pressure at this point. The way I'm looking at it is, look, I love to fight. I'm about to fight. Win, lose, or draw, I'm about to go out here and do something I love to do. That's it.
Did you think at one point you were going to be able to get back into the ring?
I always knew I would get back in the ring. That was, you know, I never doubted that. I didn't know how long it was going to take. You know, sometimes it seemed like it was going to be sooner than later. And then sometimes it seemed like it was going to be later than sooner. So it was, you know, up and down for me. And, you know, just throwing me for loops all over the place. But I knew eventually one day I would get back in the ring.
You know, Kim Randal Holt's always been known to have that right hand. You know, he's got that power. And we've had you on numerous times. We've had you on a round table. And just like Barry, you're able to pick apart fighters, and you're able to, you know, pick the weakness and strengths. What is it about Ken Holt that you see that's weak, and what is the strengths about him that you have to worry about and be sure that you're on your game to make sure you're not one of his victims?
Well, we really don't want to go into strengths and weaknesses right now. You know, at the end of the day, we still got to fight, and it's, you know, it's all about strategy at this point. But I'll say this. From what I see, you know, Kendall is a good puncher, both hands, left and right. He has good power, but it's not nothing, no power that I'm worried about. At the end of the day, I signed up to fight him. So it's boxing. You're going to get hit. I'm not worried about that. You know, a lot of said, you know, about his power, and, you know, people forget, and I'm not saying I'm the strongest man in the world.
Right.
But for a junior welterweight, I can almost say, if we, far as strength, I'm really not talking puncher power, but strength, I don't see none of them being stronger than me, period.
Let me ask you this, because starting off in your career as a pro, boxer, and then it kind of changed, you know, because the criticism was that you were just too pure as a boxer. And then we saw that transition. You started to stand, you started to train a little bit more. Being out of the ring, going back and you know, going with your sparring partners and stuff, have you reverted back to the old self, or have you just stayed where you left off?
Well, at this point, is depending on, throughout my whole career, amateur, always the pro, I was always taught to fight multiple ways. So depending on the fight, the fighter that I'm fighting, I'm going to change accordingly. For this fight, you know, of course, we want to do a little bit of both, but for the most part, what Kendall is really no need to be, you know, moving around, running around, because he's a fighter who, you know, who likes to take the time. So we kind of plan it to his hands.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
You know, like you said, you know, I'm a thinker, and you know, I like to break stuff down. So while I'm breaking the fighter down and the way I want the fight to go, I have to adjust my style accordingly.
I just got two more questions for you, and I'll let you go, brother. Go back into training camp and stuff. One of them is going to be is, what do you concentrate and watch most with Kendall Holt? Do you watch when his last fight with a knockout, or do you go back and look at his fight with like Danny Garcia? You know, it was a different pace. You know, it was drawn out a little longer. Which one is the most you love, or do you watch both of those fights?
If you want to watch tape on someone, you want to watch as many tapes as you can. Different, you know, the way he deal with different styles and things like that. Because if you just watch one fight, it's hard to pick up habits. Habits are, after you see three or four fights, things that he did, regardless of what the style is, something that he's going to do.
Right.
You kind of look for those, not just, oh, he knocked this guy out, yeah, he can punch. No, you look at everything, when he lose, when he win, if he struggled or not, you know, someone putting pressure on him, someone's boxing him. And you kind of just looking at him and looking for things that he consistently do or don't do.
My last question is one of our listeners, Matt Jimenez, is asking. He said, Raymond Serrano, how is he looking in camp?
When he first came, it was, you know, a bit out of shape, and, you know, confidence was, you know, a little down the scene. But, you know, he started to pick everything up towards the end. And I thought he was going to have, you know, a good fight last weekend. But, you know, it just didn't happen anyway.
Absolutely. Brother, hey, man, I'm glad to hear you back. I can't wait to see you get back into the ring. We can only wish you all the best. And thanks again for coming on, leaving the ring, and talking to us.
All right, no problem. Thanks for having me on.
You always just, you know, you're such a forthright guy. You really exemplify champion to me. You do. I mean, I really appreciate your honesty and just coming out. And you knew these were going to be tough questions. And you just took it head on. I appreciate it, man. Thank you.
All right, no problem, right, man.
Hey, Lamont, thanks.
All right,
I'll call you later.
All right. Hey, Dave. Thank you, too, man.
Hey, Dave, thank you, guys. Hold on a second. I'm still in the gym. You guys want to talk to Barry, or are you all right?
We actually have another guest coming right on. We'll catch Barry on another episode, for sure, without question.
All right. Okay.
Thank you so much.
All right,
man.
All right. Later.
Good night.
Later.
Good night.
All right.
Lamont Peterson here on Leaving the Ring. If you missed the interview, go ahead. You can catch it on the archive. We had Joel Diaz Jr. We're going to be calling in a few more minutes. We're going to have Jose Hernandez, and then we're going to have Steve Cunningham here on Leaving the Ring with us.
I just hit you with Loco's number. And
Le Loco.
And away we go.
Don't you know I'm loco?
And while you're doing that, speaking of drug testing and VADA, I was very surprised by that answer. They kind of alluded to me that would be the answer at some point. But it had been so long. I mean, he just got so quiet. But Steve Kim is tweeting this, that I believe it's March 13th, that Lamont Peterson will be – not Lamont Peterson. Tim Bradley. His March 16th, his next fight will be under the auspices of VADA testing. One of my sources, it might be Ruslan Provodnikov that he's getting in the ring with. But from what I understand, both guys will be doing VADA testing. I'm not sure if that's the exact opponent. What I'm told is in the contract, both guys will be doing VADA testing. So there you go. It's moving forward.
There you go. Yep. Something that everybody said, there was a dead horse that we were beating on. Brandon Rios and Mike Alvarado, the rematch. March 30th. Yeah, can we please speak to Jose Hernandez?
Oh, yeah, 1 second.
All right, thank you. What a big surprise there, huh? Alvarado and Rios fighting. Yeah, is this Jose?
Yes, sir.
Hey, how you doing? Hey, thanks for taking the time to speak to us here on Leaving the Ring. Had a great sensational win on ESPN Friday Night Fights. How you doing, man?
I'm doing fine, man. I got out of work.
Oh, right on, man. Hey, I just got off of work, too.
we've never had you on the show. Myself, this is Gabriel Montoya. I write with Max Boxing, and I'm with this show, obviously. And this is my co-host, Dave Duenas, and we're leaving it in the ring. Since we've never had you on, we'd love for you to tell us your story. How did you first get involved in boxing? And we'll get to your big win, soon enough. But first, tell us a little bit about yourself.
What can I say? My name is Jose Hernandez. I'm 25 years old. I come from a family of 15 kids, 12 boys, 3 girls. What else? I started boxing when I was 7 years old. Liked it ever since. I've seen my older brothers doing it. They're the ones who, introduced me to the boxing game. And yeah, man, I love doing it. And
were you a
I
street
loved
fighter?
It ever since, you know.
Were you Excuse a street? Me? Were you a street fighter at all?
I've gotten into street fights before, and I'm, not proud of it. But boxing has kept me off the streets and kept me positive instead of negative,
Now you. You had some early losses. I mean, did you have much of an amateur career?
I've had about 150 amateur fights.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
At the national or international, did you start to compete?
I was trying to make the Olympic trials, but I just kind of blew up in weight, and I just decided to go professional after that.
Originally, you were what? You started at 117, and then you moved pretty quick up in weight. I mean, was that just naturally you were growing? Were you trying to figure out?
I was trying to make the Olympics at 106. That was my last amateur weight. I went 106. Well, I actually fought a few times, like at 112, but all my recognition pretty much was at 106. So once I blew up, started to gain weight, I went pro.
Man, how did you ever make 106?
Yeah, I used to be little meaty, man.
Why do they call you Loco? Why do they call you that?
They call me Loco just because the way I was out of boxing, that's pretty much a name for me. As even when I go to tournaments, you know, I'd always get in trouble and things like that. You know, I was a little troublemaker. Yeah, everybody always called me local because stuff that I did, you know, not the stuff that I did.
Now, as you kind of moved along in your career, you started to hit, you know, you had your first loss, I think six fights in against Matt Remillard, but you went the distance. It was tough. And then you had a tough stretch in 2010 where you lost three fights in a row. Since then, but you've always been like in tough, and you've always been right there and arguably the winner of those fights. What keeps you going?
What keeps me going, man? My family, you know. I got four kids, two stepkids. I have two daughters of my own, you know. And that's pretty much what keeps me going, you know. I go to work, I get out, I go to the gym. I try to do it all, you know. My mentality in boxing as of right now is to become a world champ, you know. I know I wasn't in the best of shape this last fight, and I know just getting in there and getting those victories, and I actually could stay in the gym and be in top shape. I know I could be one of the big fighters out there.
Tell me a little bit about, you know, man, because hearing that, you know, having the four kids and going to work and then trying to fit in boxing in between all that, Jose. Tell me how you feel personally, how it separates a fighter like yourself that has to go through extra obstacles from another fighter that can do it full time, being in the gym and has these amount of sponsors and has the amount of backing where they think that he's going to be that special person in the ring.
Well. I didn't really get how you're saying the question.
Okay. I'll simplify it really more. Do you think the hardship that you're going along with benefits you a lot more than the guy that's basically handed the easier road?
Oh well, no, I really don't, man. It makes it easier on them, yeah. Of course, you know, it makes it easier on them, but I mean, it gives a fighter more hunger, you know, me as a fighter, just knowing when I went to his last fight, okay, when I went to his last fight, I had seen video on him. I knew I could beat him, and I knew this was an opportunity for me. Some of his previous fights, I just knew, you know, this was my opportunity, and I took it, you know. I didn't take it right out off the top when they told me about the fight, but I pretty much told him, give me a few hours or whatever and take a look at this guy, and I did, you know. And as soon as I seen him, I pretty much knew this was my, you know, my opportunity.
So you didn't jump on. You didn't jump on it right away. You actually told your you know, whoever approached you, give me a few minutes, give me a few hours, let me check it out, and then
yeah,
you made the decision.
Yeah. It crossed my mind to take the fight. You know,
that's local. That's local already in its own meeting and stuff. Like,
yeah, it crossed my mind to take a fight and everything, but it's just, you know.
What
just,
were you conditioning wise in terms of a percentage? You know, from
man. I had been in the gym a few weeks before, you know, before the fight. But then the week before that I had taken it off because I'm just getting out of work, and we're pretty much getting out of work late every day. Getting out of work about 7 o'clock, 7:30 at night.
What exactly do you do, if you don't mind me asking? What do you do, you know, when you talk about work?
I do roofing, man.
Yeah, that's tough right there. I'm a plumber, brother, and man, roofing is a tough gig to do.
It's not like we
do commercial roofing, roofing and sheet metal.
Yeah, there's no time set for roofers, man. You guys are out there until it gets done. If it's rain season, you guys got to get it done.
Well, that
we don't close it up, it gets wet, you know, all that
right.
stuff. But Yeah.
If you skip the gym, it's not like you're skipping on your conditioning, though. You're rude.
Yeah, the week before the fight, that previous week, I took it all off. You know, I wasn't stepping to the gym at all. That Saturday, I found out about the fight, and that's pretty much when I told him, you know, like, give me a few hours. Let me figure something out, you know what I mean? Let me watch some video on this guy. And when I seen it, you know, I knew this was my opportunity. I knew I could beat the guy, and we took the fight, you know. And,
what was it that you saw?
I knew he held back a lot on his punches. It just his punches were tight. He didn't throw his punches all the way out. I knew I could if I wanted to, I could fight him on the outside. But even though I tried, I still ended up on the inside. But that's just where my comfort is at. Like I'm comfortable inside, but I know I could fight inside when I'm in tip top shape. I know I could fight in and outside.
Yeah, you started whipping from the outside those shots. I mean, that's ultimately what hurt him and got him out of there. When you started to really feel it with the range. I mean, what I liked about what you did, it was very professional, I thought, was you fought on the inside, like you said, and then you took it to the outside. You kept mixing it up on him, and he'd never gone past eight. Did you know also that? Did you take note of that? Like, I need to get him tired, extended, and in a dogfight so that he just kind of doesn't know what's coming, and then I'm going to drop the hammer. Was that part of the plan?
Well, you know, that right there, that perspective from eight rounds, I didn't look deep into all that stuff. Like I didn't notice that he had gone past eight. And I didn't, you know, there's not really much videos on his fight. There's like
right.
probably two or three out there, but I didn't see that he had went over eight rounds. But I mean, I noticed that. Here of lately, you know, I've had all these fights against all these prospects, and the referee has pretty much been, you know, taking the decision from me. So I knew coming into this fight that I couldn't let that happen. I mean, even though I wasn't in tip top shape, I mean, I did those times that I hit him with my hardest. I just tried to take him out of there, but I mean, my mindset was pretty much get in there and. Whether it went 10 rounds, I was just going to have to stop him no matter what round I was in.
So when you went back and looked at video on him, you know, because like you said, you took a few hours. What was the one fight that you witnessed that convinced you, hey, I can beat this guy?
Ledesma. He fought some guy named Ledesma or something like that. A tall black dude. I'm not really sure.
Andres. Just Ledesma.
Every time I seen that he'd pressure him. He'd pressure him. Kept making him, you know, kept making him go back, and he wouldn't tackle until he went to the ropes, you know. And I mean, the guy didn't do much, you know. He didn't put any pressure on him. So I knew coming into this fight, I knew that I had to be the one putting in the pressure, because every time that he came. Yes, he came into that guy. He would, you know, he would pressure him. He'd go down to the body. He would pretty much what he tried to do with me, except for I knew how to move. You know, I knew how to move around, and at times I used my length.
Yeah, you were relaxed too. You know, that's what I noticed. You were very compared to him. He seemed very tight. He kind of had like gym muscles in a sense. It's like his physique.
Yeah, well, there's a. I'm sorry. That was one thing I've learned from losing these fights. Sometimes I get anxious and I'll start trying to just swing, like at any time he comes close to me, I try to hit him just with anything, you know, try to turn the fight around. But I noticed that with this fight, I just had to calm down. You know, I had to calm down, and I had to wait, you know, on my punches. Instead of wasting punches and getting tired, I had to, you know, choose pretty much what punch I wanted. And the left hand was landing every time, you know, so.
Yeah, I got to tell you, not only was the win very impressive, but the way the leading of you getting going into this fight, brother, is really impressive. You know, by you telling us, you know, you didn't jump into this opportunity. You thought it out before you did it. Because the surprise for most people is most fighters that are not known, they're just going to take whatever opportunity is out there and they're going to go off of their self belief. You actually did it the right way. You said, you know what? Let me see where I'm at. Let me see where this guy's at, and then I'll make my assessment. To me alone, that just tells me how intelligent you are, before you got in that ring and how intelligent you were in that ring. It's kudos to you, man. I love to hear stories like this, you know. You don't come across this all the time, but I got to tell you this, regardless of whatever goes from here, we're going to keep a very close eye on you, man. Real close eye. And managers, and we have a lot of managers and publicists that listen to the radio show. You better watch out for this local.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
Well, it's interesting. I'm curious, you know, because before, like, you had some losses, and you, like you said, you kind of were facing these prospects, and you didn't almost feel like, I got the sense that you didn't really have quite the chance to win that you felt like you did going into this. Is this new management that you're under with the Espinosas? And do you think it's kind of a testament to that this was a calculated risk? I mean, going into the fight,
right?
I was surprised the way you won it by that stunning knockout, but we knew this was going to be a tough fight, you know, that you weren't an easy out by any stretch. Do you think that's the difference? Is somebody's kind of looking out for you a little more
now?
The
management has a lot to do with it, too, you know. Like we were talking about earlier, I was having a few rough fights early in my career, I already forgot his name. You were just talking about him a while ago.
Are you talking about Frank Espinosa? Or
no, the fighter that I fought in Connecticut.
Let me jump back for you. On my computer. You're talking about Ledesma or the? Well, you know what struck me about that you figured out that fighter. That's for people that don't know that fight. That's he got knocked out in one round, like 1:57 by.
That was pretty much what I needed to see.
That's funny.
Because whenever I was trying to look for him, I couldn't find anything.
You're talking about Matt Remillard is the guy.
Yeah, there you go. Matt Remillard, I mean, he was a tough dude, but I mean, I beat him. I wanted to cry when I freaking lost, man. I did, like, you know, I mean, I held it in, but I was just like, it just made me mad because, you know, having everybody, all his people come around me telling me, man, you won that fight, just that, you know, like, hey, what the hell can I do, you know? It's like, he had people behind him, you know, and they're pretty much, they'll take care of him, you know what I mean? So, I mean, I understand that, I mean, I had to keep my head up. I had to keep my head up and keep fighting. When I fought Sharif Bozier, I took that fight on short notice. That was one fight I should have took off short notice. And I pretty much didn't do any research on him. I just took the fight, you know. And it's like, I don't know if I had two to three months to get ready. Personally, I know I could beat Sharif Bozier, but you know, I would have to get up in rankings before I fight him again. You know.
Yeah, it would have to matter, and I think because he's moved into a position, you know, it would have to be advantageous for him. But you know, man, I hope that 2013 is the year that get those 3 months. And I think with the Espinosas, they're as smart of managers as I think smarter than your average manager.
Man, they're real good people, man. I have a lot of faith in.
Well, you know, too with the Espinosas, not only are they managers, they're boxing fans, and I think that's a major plus. You know, they understand the game.
Yeah, no question. Well. Local, I really enjoyed your story, and I hope that this is the first of many appearances on the show. And I know you just got off work, so, you know, go grab whatever you grab and enjoy.
I grabbed me dinner a little while ago. But, yeah, man, I appreciate y'all having me on and everything.
appreciate you coming on, brother, mostly, you know what I mean? It's a major pleasure of you coming on our show and speaking to us, you know, and look forward in seeing you in action again.
Yes, sir. Y'all watch. Hopefully next time I'll see me. Well, I know y'all will be in way better shape, and I know y'all will enjoy it.
Right.
Yeah, thank you for having me on, and you have a good one, man.
You too,
man. We'll catch you next time. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye.
Jose Loco Hernandez on Leaving the Ring.
Nice guy.
Man, you know, really impressive. I got to tell you, really impressive. You know, a lot of times we get the big, you know, the big names that come on the show, and but it's always the guys that are not that known yet.
Yeah.
Leave more of an impression.
Well, it's just, you know, the boxing is that. The only sport I can think of, I mean, I guess MMA, but, you know, boxing, we're talking about, you know, it's the 30-point, you know, come-from-behind basket, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was a tough fight, and, you know, the way the fight was going, he probably was heading towards another bad decision. Instead, he just knocks the dude out, and he comes from behind, and he's a guy that he knows in his heart, if I'm in good condition, I can beat anybody or compete with anybody out there. I just never quite in that position, and he still takes a calculated risk based off of 2 minutes of film where another guy is getting knocked out. He's like, oh, I can take that dude. And he does it. You know, that's the beauty of boxing, where everything on some level, I don't know, universally is kind of fair. You know, to me, that fight, it was just like, you know, the guy's inexperience versus everything against Hernandez kind of made it fair. And he comes out with a knockout, and it's just awesome. Like, he shouldn't have that, you know, but he earned it. He took it. That's what boxing's all about.
Yeah,
you know?
I agree.
All about. It's so I'm just exhilarated listening to that guy.
Yeah, absolutely. Super Bowl weekend this Sunday, 49ers. And, you know, I'm not a big football fan, but everybody over here is really super excited. So everybody out there, have a great time. Be careful and stuff. Plenty of Super Bowl parties. I just wanted to mention that real quick because the kid that I believe is the quarterback, he's only a couple of towns away from where I live at right now in Turlock. And so everybody over here is – that's like the main talk right
yeah.
now.
You know, I don't know. The more I go, I kind of talk on other sports shows sometimes. There's a new blog talk show, the California Sports Report, that I guest on. But, yeah, I just don't – you know, the longer I've been – I used to be a sports freak, like, all the way around, and I played everything growing up. And the older I get, like, I still check in with my Lakers, you know.
Right.
I still keep track of my Rams. Actually, I watch my Rams religiously. I'm still very passionate about them. But, you know, once my team's out of it, I don't know, I'm not super blown away by the Super Bowl. Baseball – honestly, if they set it on fire and then, like, threw it into the sun, I wouldn't care. Like,
you know what? Honestly, I got to tell you the truth. You know, when I started Leaving in the Ring, I always used to say I don't care for other sports. I don't watch other sports. But I guess your taste changes and stuff. And then when you meet more people and you get involved and stuff, like, you know, when you have kids and they get older, my kids are baseball fans. I've become a Giants fan. And I've met some great people along the line in being involved in the radio, in the boxing radio show and doing other things. And I became like I said, I'm not a big football fan. I'm not going to sit there and try to have a conversation because I don't know the sport that well. But I've met some folks that are 49er fans, you know, Raider fans, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So it is what it is. Fight fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598. We'll get away from that conversation because
well,
it's a boxing radio show.
It is though, how I've actually come to know and love chocolate pudding wrestling. You know, I didn't know a lot about it, but the more
you know,
I get into it, I meet some really great people, you know, just very loving.
Can't be a judge of that sport. You know?
I don't know a lot about the rules, but I know what I like, you know, and I know a big play when I see one.
And there's no penalty if the bra comes off.
It's
trust
true.
Me.
It's
you
true.
Know?
We end up going right to overtime.
Right. And there's a lot of vitamin D in that. Anyways, 347-215-7598. Call in on Leaving the Ring Radio. Talk to myself, Dave Duenas, and Gabriel Montoya. We're going to have Steve Cunningham call in, talk about his upcoming fight. And we'll even talk a little bit about the Adamic fight. let's patch in some fight fans. Let's see if any fight fans want to talk here on boxing, or if they're just tuning in and listening to us, you know,
about chocolate pudding
like that. Soto Cool Ross. Got to talk, just before I patch in the fight fan, got to talk a little bit about that. I mean, this guy, here's another fighter with a good story, okay? The guy should be really on his way out, but shows, you know what? Drive is just, oh, you know what? I'm sorry. He's ready for us. So, yeah, I forgot that it's at 6:45, our interview.
Yes.
And they're hitting me up right now saying that he's ready to go. So let's call in Mr. Steve Cunningham, and let's talk some boxing here on Leaving in the Ring. So I apologize. I don't know why I was thinking it was going to be at 7 o'clock. I think
tonight feels like we're just up against it all night. It's me, you know, because you were, like, ready and early. You hit me up 10 minutes before. I turned on your Skype, and I was down the street at the wherever I was. Late.
Down the street, having a brewski.
Hello?
Yeah, can I please speak to Steve?
Spagan.
Hey, Steve, this is Dave Quintus and my co-host Gabriel Montoya from Max Box and Steve in the Ring. How you doing, sir?
Hey, what's up?
So let me ask you first before, you know, because, you know, when things are throwing out, like Twitter's like that, almost like that news, somebody gets something and it just becomes viral. Is the Tyson Fury fight a go?
No, it's not a go. It's just talks, you know, people just talking. My promoter talking with his people, and that's it, you know. He's got other people he's looking at also, so, I mean, I'm nobody's, he's looking for other fights, you know, and he also tweeted he's not looking for a chess match. He's looking for somebody to come straight at him, so, you know, I don't know, but we'll see.
You know, when somebody says something like that, he's not looking for a chess match. He's looking for somebody to come straight at him. And we had Tyson Fury. Here's a guy that, you know, he was pretty vocal about everybody from every corner of the earth. And he was like, I'm willing to fight anybody. I want to fight somebody. What does that tell you, though, Steve, when he kind of just X you out of the whole equation now, all of a sudden you're not part of that corner of the earth that he wants to face?
I mean, yeah, that's somebody who just talks, you know. You can look at my resume. I'm willing to fight anybody and everybody, but, you know, I don't talk it. You know, I just go do it. You know, talkers talk, doers do. And he talked, and he was tweeting back and forth with Eddie Chambers, and they added me, and Eddie's like, well, I know Cunningham's looking for a fight this spring, early spring. And he's like, oh, well, I'm looking for somebody to come at me, not a chess match. So I was like, damn, dude, do you want to fight anybody, or do you just want to pick and choose who you fight? You know, I haven't had that option or that luxury to do that at any time in my career. So, like I said, I fight 6'9", 7 feet. It don't matter. You know, I'm willing to fight whoever.
Do you think do you honestly think that he has that option, though? I mean, I don't understand how he would think he has that option. Is he that much bigger of a draw than you?
Yeah, is he? You know what I'm saying? Say that. You know, tweet that. I don't know. I'm hearing he's the draw. I mean, I'm hearing if we were to fight, he would be the draw. And I'm like, how is that possible here in America, you know? Almost 3.5 million people just saw me fight, and we got a nice buzz going off of that Adamic victory loss. how would he be the draw coming to America, fighting me on NBC? You know, this it just doesn't make sense, man. The things people say in order to get you to fight for low money, you know.
Let's talk about that victory loss. This is Gabe Montoya with Max Boxing and Leave It in the Ring. Welcome to the show, Steve, first off. And second off, I thought you won it. How do you persevere through fights like that where you just – it's always a close one, but it's just, you know, it's just never your night. How do you keep fighting, man? Or is that just another log that you throw on the fire?
I mean, yeah, it's a log you throw on the fire. And, I mean, I still feel I have so much more to – do and accomplish in this sport, in this business, in boxing. I mean, that just fuels that fire, you know what I'm saying? So, excuse me. So, it is one of the things. It hurts here and there. You know, I'm over it. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I can't say that. You're never over something like that. I mean, that was an obvious unanimous decision for me. I mean, so here and there, I think about it, and it's like, man, am I going to wake up? Is this a dream? You know? I mean, I flat out beat that guy, man. And it's just, it's saddening how, you know, when I think about it sometimes, it makes me sad for a bit. But then it's like you look to the future, you know? So, and that's what helps keep me going.
And, you know, if you had to matchmake yourself, I don't know if you'd put yourself in with Tyson Fury, or would you? I mean, do you look at a guy like that and say, you know, the bigger they are, the harder they fall? Or, I mean, I always kind of think of, like, little guys. Cause, well, let me back up first. How do you feel at heavyweight? You were 203 against Adamek, and it's, you know, as much as I thought you won the fight, it's still kind of nip and tuck competition. So what do you think about yourself at heavyweight, or do you think you're more of a cruiserweight?
Nah, my weight was my low weight was due to first the when we weighed in, it wasn't 203, it was about 205, which isn't a lot more, but the commissioner, you know, because I had on my sweatpants, which probably weighed 0.8 pounds, you know, the commissioner Greg Third, he pushed the hissy fit and just basically shouted out 203, you know, and my trainer, Buddy Osborne, is like, yo, the scale's still going up. And he cussed my trainer out, you know, and it's like, yo, what is going on here? You know, I should have known something was fishy then. But it was just crazy. But my weight, I would have been heavier. I would have been much heavier. I was leaving the gym at about 208, 209. But the week of the fight, that Tuesday of the fight, I got a stomach virus. My son, he was in church throwing up, and, you know, oh, man, everybody got the stomach virus from him, and I caught it, and I was in the bathroom, like, all week, you know, like, just, I couldn't hold nothing on. So when weigh-in time came, I was, you know, 204, 205 or whatever, and, but, I mean, my weight would be 210 is my target weight. I mean, I don't want to go too high because I'd be like Adamek. You know, Adamek, he's fat now. You know what I mean?
He's kind of gut. Slowed down. Yeah.
Yeah, he's slowed down. I mean, look at David Haye. He hasn't blown up. He's smart. You know what I mean? That's a smart weight for a guy. You know, 210. It doesn't have an extra weight on you. Doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be – no, actually, it doesn't mean you're powerful. It obviously means you're not going to be fast as you were because you just got extra weight.
Right.
You know, but that 210, I mean, I fought Jason Gavin at 207, 208, 207, and I felt great. I mean, I feel awesome, man. I tell you the truth, I was telling my wife, my manager, like, man, you know, I was, you know, maybe I should have been putting on weight, you know, a few years ago, but I was a small cruiserweight, man, and I was, like, training like a middleweight trying to make weight. You know, that's just my work ethic. Well, that's how it was.
That's interesting. I mean, it does take time, I imagine, to acclimate and get bigger and bigger. I mean, Holyfield, I think, was, I want to say 208 against Michael Doakes, and later on kind of was peaking like somewhere between 215 and 218. When you look at the way you're going to match up against a lot of these bigger heavyweights, is that kind of a model that you look at? Because speed is a relative thing. Do you look at Holyfield as kind of a model, or you just look at Steve Cunningham in another weight class?
Yeah, I mean, I look at guys like Holyfield. I look at guys who've done it, who've come up, you know, from lower weights and done it and done good things. I mean, like I said, I've seen what David Haye's done, and he hasn't gone over 210. So it's like, but I still do Steve Cunningham. You know, whatever weight I get at, I mean, that's the weight I'm going to fight at. I know I'll be over 200, you know, so I can perform at that weight. You know, I just have confidence in my skill level. You know, I just believe I can be heavyweight world champion.
Hey, let me make this clear. You're with Main Events now, right?
Yes.
Okay. So let me ask you this: with the Adamek fight, is with that fight, and a lot of fight fans believe that you won that fight, and you know, I went back and forth with some fans and stuff, and you know, and I was like, I never said that you didn't lose the fight, but I was pointing out there were some things about the fight that I thought you could have done a little bit more. You know, I thought you could have let your hands go a little earlier, et cetera, et cetera. But being that all said, why haven't we heard anything from your promoter about giving you another fight with Adamick? And why were they so quick to defend Thomas and not you in any of the conversations or any of the press releases or tweets that they threw out?
What do you mean, not defend me? I never, nobody, they defended Adamick. I didn't read any of that.
Yeah,
the thing is, the promoter, we didn't ask for a rematch because it's mindless, you know, it's senseless. First, if we did ask for a rematch, I wouldn't get it until, like, probably next year, you know what I mean? Because
why?
Adamick, we were in that tournament,
oh,
you know?
Right.
And hypothetically speaking, let's say Adamick beats Pulev and he fights Vladimir, then, you know, I'm asked out until late 2013, early 2014. But if he doesn't beat Pulev, you know, will he fight me? You know what I'm saying? And we already know that Adamick said there won't be a Cunningham Adamick trilogy. He basically said the same thing Tyson Fury said. He's like, I don't want a guy that's going to basically use the ring. I want a guy that's going to come at me. So this is my thinking, like, golly, you know, anybody box anymore? This is boxing. You know?
Yeah.
Is anybody boxing, you know? But, I mean, with the main events thing, there are things on the inside that I can't speak of that I can say that I know about main events and Adamick and then just the relationships that would shoot down all these speculations. But, I mean, business is business, you know what I'm saying? I can't 100% speak for anybody but me. And when I performed, I felt it was a unanimous decision, and it was ridiculous.
I understand that.
It was. I understand that.
Business is business. But we're talking about a promotional company. Well, I've spoken to Kathy, and she's always been like, you know what? The heavyweights were... The glory of heavyweights have never been with guys over 6'2". It's always been with guys that are lighter, and we had greater fights with footwork, hand speed, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I thought that's the reason why they decided to sign you and try to promote you and stuff, right? I mean, that was the whole realm. And if you go take it back to the 80s and the mid-90s, you're a replica of what the heavyweights really were.
Yeah, I mean, listen, when I, before I fought Troy Ross, for the, you know, before I moved to, went to Germany to get promoted in Germany, you know, I sat down with American promoters after I got away from Don King. And, you know, I had that title shot right there with me. Because Adamick vacated the title and went up to heavyweight. So
mm-hmm.
I talked with promoters, and every American promoter I talked to was talking about heavyweight. Back then, that was 2010. You know, heavyweight. And my mind wasn't heavyweight then. Tell you the truth, I was planning on staying a cruiserweight. I wanted to be the most dominant cruiserweight of all time. That was my ideal plan right there. But not being able to get unification bouts with the other champs, Huck, Ladarch, Danny Green had a belt at the time. He didn't want any parts of me. You know, without Guillermo Jones, all of these dudes I already beat, you know, except for Danny Green. I beat Ladarchik, I beat Huck, and I beat Guillermo Jones. None of them wanted to give me a unification bout. So I had to take the Hernandez fight in order to get a check and in order to, you know, stay busy and stick with my obligations and my contract, trying to fight three times a year. So, but then that whole Hernandez debacle happened, and it's like, we were going to go heavyweight after the first Hernandez fight. If the first Hernandez fight went the way, you know, if it wasn't a shady stoppage, you know, we would have went heavyweight after that fight regardless. But because I just couldn't get any fights as a cruiserweight, I've just been fighting my mandatory, and that's money, and it's ridiculous.
Gotcha. Yep.
No, that makes sense to me. So what do you think now? Are you training in the gym right now? Are you taking a rest? And how soon do you think you're going to be fighting next?
Well, hopefully I will be fighting in that April card, on that April card.
Okay.
The talks are still going on with Tyson Fury and his people. And, I mean, shoot, I want Povetkin. I know that Povetkin and Vladimir got some things going on that they may fight or may not fight. I don't know what's going on, but, I want to fight. You know, I want to fight. I want to make decent money for fighting, and I want to fight. I want to expose it when I fight, you know?
You're such an interesting fighter because you spent time in Europe, right? You were signed over there, and then and it didn't seem like you quite got the traction that you wanted, and then you came over here. And now they're calling you to come back there. You are like the ultimate warrior. You're like the Glenn Johnson, like the next Glenn Johnson. It seems like you'll go anywhere for a fight, and you always give an honest account. Your fights are always fun. I hope you get that big fight, man. I think fight fans really want to see you in it.
Appreciate it. My thing with going to Germany was it was 50-50 thing, like 50% personal. Like a personal thing I wanted to do, and the other 50 was, you know, I thought the Huck rematch was attractive, you know, so I signed with his promoter, and they were talking about doing that Cruiserweight Super 6, and that was the promoter who did the Super 6, so
right.
I'm figuring, you know, that'd be great, you know, and that crap went on for 2 years, well, we're doing this and we're doing that, and then I lose my belt, you know, to the home team guy, but I've always had this thing since I was a kid. You know, you hear boxing world champion, and it always put him. I was always in the mind of thinking, you know, fighting around the world. You know, you get to travel around the world and fight in different countries. You know, but you know how that is now. You know, people don't. I mean, I haven't been, like I said before, I haven't had the privilege or the honor to have a promoter get behind me and work with me. You know, you see, I was with Don for 8 years, and he shipped me out Poland twice. Numerous times, you know, so it's like, but I built a fan base through those victories, and it was the obvious place for me to go when I needed a new promoter.
Well, you are that guy that's like, through just sheer work and all your fights, you're like, you may not have a specific home, but with fight fans, like, we know who you are. Like, you know, if you're a fight fan, then you watch Steve Cunningham and you're a fan of his. It's interesting seeing that, seeing how your career has gone. I mean, you've kind of been everywhere, it seems. In the Germany, I'm curious, what's it feel like to win in another country? You're, like, all your people aren't ringside, but maybe it's just your team.
Well, let me put it like this. It lets you know that you're good at what you do, because I want to just win. You're not going to get a hometown decision type of victory over there. You know what I mean? You're not going to get a hookup. You're not going to get a lookout. If you win over there, you worked hard. You know, you showed your skill. You put in work, and that's been my whole mindset. You know, I work hard in the gym. I mean, I work hard. You know, and I push. You know, I pray, I got faith, you know, that's why I was just like, hey, why would I be scared to go anywhere? Why would I be scared to fight him? You know, I'm not scared to fight this man or that man. I'm a boxer, I'm a fighter, that's what we do, you know? I fight a exactly. guy who comes at me or who wants a chess match, it doesn't matter, you know? What the heck?
That's awesome.
At any point, Steve, at any point out of the, you know, going with Don and et cetera, going with that, they were hoping the Cruiserweight Super 6. At any point in your career, did you feel like, you know what, I'm almost done with this, you know, I'm kind of done with the boxing thing, I should just hang them up?
Nah, like I said, even after that Adamic fight, you know, some people were saying that, and I'm like, I still feel I've got so much more fight in me, man. I still got things I want to accomplish in this thing. I won't even just call boxing a sport because it's not. In this lifestyle called boxing, it's just so much more I want to show and do. You know, I'm not there yet. I mean, mindset, we're preparing, you know, financially to be, you know, when boxing is over, we're trying to prepare for that. But I mean, my heart and my body and my spirit, man. I'm a fighter, man. I'm a boxer until God tells me it's time to stop.
What's the ultimate goal?
Fair
to
enough.
To be as recognized as the world champion, or to be recognized as a household name?
Ultimate goal is to be heavyweight world champion. If I do that right, then I'll be recognized. I'll be a household name. I mean, if you look at it, if I grab a heavyweight world title, I'm an instant Hall of Fame, you know, I'm an instant Hall of Famer, you know?
Right.
From another weight class, two-time world champion as a cruiserweight and grabbing a heavyweight title, you know, that's the best fighter in Philadelphia history right there, you know?
Yeah.
I'd go down as probably the best fighter in heavyweight, I mean, in Philadelphia boxing history, which is a lot, you know, which means a lot because Philly brought some beast out, you know, to the boxing scene, so... That right there, that's all quoted from Nazim, too, because he's always going in on, oh, man, you get a heavyweight title, man. Can't nobody argue, you know, you're a first ballot Hall of Famer and you're the best fighter in Philly ever. And they're like, wow.
And you better make sure they put a statue of you because they didn't see Joe Frazier, you know what I'm saying?
They're working on that, man. They're working on that now. That's going to get done. You know?
Yeah,
that's
but how long did it take for that to happen?
Truthfully, I couldn't care. And just make a boxing gym in my name. I don't need a statue. Just make a boxing gym in my name.
Fair enough.
Hey, Steve, the whole conversation, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. You haven't mentioned the Kalishkos. And every time we get a heavyweight, okay, and it's normally like a prospect that you know, it automatically is a heavyweight. They throw their case of how they can beat the Kalishkos and stuff. You haven't said nothing. I mean, realistically, do you think that fight for you right now can happen and should it happen? Because I've always said that I think that they have to go in order for us to see some good heavyweight fights and to see a heavyweight that's going to reign to a legitimate heavyweight. We're not getting that between two brothers.
I mean, you're right about that. When the Klitschko's are done, when Vladimir retires and Vitaly retires, you're going to see it's going to be a frenzy. And I wish, I don't know, I know Vladimir personally. I've talked with, you know, I sparred with him for the David Haye camp, and we talked a while, and we had the same lawyer, John Hornerer. So, I know he said he's going to retire when he's about 40. You know, when that day happens, when they free those belts up, oh, it's going to be a heavyweight frenzy. Everybody's going to come out the woodwork. You're probably going to see Burt Cooper.
I was about to say Holyfield, but he's still in the mix.
You're probably going to see Burt Cooper come up trying to fight for the title again. But, me personally, listen, this is my take on the Klitschko's and wanting to fight the Klitschko's. These guys, number one, these guys are big. They're huge.
Right.
Like Tyson Fury is huge, but he's not a Klitschko huge. Klitschko's are huge and skillful, and I know they work hard because I've seen it. This guy, Tyson Fury, and they use their abilities to you know, to the top of, you know, they know how to use their height and their reach, and they work it. This guy, Tyson Fury, he's fighting on the inside. He's clinching. That's unbelievable at 6'9".
But it's entertaining.
Yeah, entertaining, no doubt.
Yeah.
But so with Vladimir and Vitaly, everybody wants to fight them because they're the Mike Tyson of our era. You know, people figure if they fight them, they'll make a check. You know what I'm saying? That's the main thing. I'm not in it just to make a check. You know what I'm saying? I want to make history. You know, I want to make the right moves to get me to the right, you know what I mean, to the right spot. I'd love to fight one of the Klitschko's or both. You know, that'd be awesome. But I would love to get a belt. I'd love to do like David Haye did it. Get a belt from a normal size heavyweight and then go fight a unification bout. That would be perfect. You know, I'm not rushing into a fight with them just to fight a Klitschko. You know, that's ridiculous. You know, make it make sense, you know.
Gotcha, man.
I agree with that.
Yep, big time. Hey, you know what? We haven't had you on. This is the first time. I got to tell you, brother, it was entertaining. It was great. We got to have you on again, you know. I want to thank you for the time you've taken. It's late over there where you're at. We're over here in the West Coast and stuff. And the sun, the sun is still shining through the darkness and stuff.
Yeah,
but thanks.
I got to say something to you, Steve. That I saw what you tweeted on Twitter or put out on Twitter that – about, you know, guys being disrespectful to fighters, and not a lot of – we've been doing this show for, like, 4 years now.
Yeah.
And I write for Max Boxing. You know Steve Kim. You've interviewed with him. We try to be professional about it, and I agree with you that, you know, guys that are doing the less of professional thing just because they get a radio show, and they talk so disrespectfully to you guys, and they don't take seriously what it is that you do, and they think just because they get to watch it, that means they can treat you guys that way. And so I support you in that, man.
Yeah, I mean, there's guys out there that they, like, when you're media, you're media. You
right.
know, that's why there's a problem with guys, anybody nowadays who's got access to the internet and you know, they can call themselves a boxing writer, or, you know, or we got a blog talk, you know, we got a radio show.
Right.
Or something. You know what I mean? Anybody nowadays can be boxing media. And that's the crazy thing about boxing. This is the only sport where you
yep.
can do that. Like football, basketball, you just can't walk into the sport on nothing, you know?
Exactly, yeah.
But
be a promoter or whatever, a manager in this sport. You can be anything.
Dudes off the street can just be sitting in the gym, hey, let me manage you. And if the kid don't know any better, hey, this guy's in boxing. So this sport is just like it's like open to the public. And when it's open like that, you just got people that are ridiculous, you know?
Yep.
And there was a guy I had an issue with on Twitter. But, I mean, you know, I just let him know, like, geez, if you're media, you're media. Stay media, you know? Don't if you got a personal opinion, you shouldn't voice that through your media credentials if you have any, you know? Like,
exactly.
Gee whiz, but be media, you know? But these guys, man, they disrespect you. They still fans. They're just fans who really like boxing, and they, oh, you know, and you can't blame dudes. They really like it. They love it. They want to be part of it. And so they can't get in the ring, so they, you know, or they won't. So, or let me do this and let me do that. That's respectable. But gee whiz, keep it respectable then.
Exactly. I agree with you, man. Well, it's a pleasure to meet you, and look forward to having you on more shows.
All right, man. Thank you. Really appreciate it.
All right. Take it too, brother.
All right. Talk to you later.
Steve Cunningham, and if you missed the interview, don't worry about it. You'll catch it on the website, leavingtheringradio.com. Fight fans, I hope you guys are enjoying it. We're going to have Steve Kim in a short bit here on Leaving the Ring Radio. You want to call in 347-215-7598. Let's patch in some fight fans really quick, man.
Steve Kim is waiting for us. I mean, he's only going to be available till 7:30. I just texted you the number.
Oh, my bad.
So let us grab Steve. It's his birthday. And
it is. Yeah, that's right. It is his birthday. He's becoming an old man. Let's get Mr. Steve Kim here on Leaving the Ring Radio. You know what's funny? He always texts me his number when I have it, but I never lock it, you know?
There you go. We'll lock it.
I know. I should. I should lock his number, but I never do. So anyways, we're going to have Steve Kim from Max Boxing, one of our favorite writers.
Hello,
birthday boy. How you doing?
You know what? I don't feel a day over 57. It's unbelievable.
Hey,
what's going on, fellas?
Let me ask you this,
man.
What time are you taking the shots off the belly of some college girl that's leaning over saying, Mr. Steve Kim, take advantage?
Who says that hasn't happened already?
So how you doing, man? So how does it feel?
I don't feel any older than before. I think age is just a number. It's interesting. I don't really make much of a big deal over these milestones. After a while, they all just kind of run together. And actually, today I had a normal day. I just made a few phone calls. I wrote an article. And I'll be going out to dinner here soon. But, you know, definitely want to be here with you guys. The latest update I could give you guys is that Mares Donaire was not successfully negotiated over
right.
the Internet and Twitter.
That only proves make over Twitter sometimes, you know?
Yeah, and it's interesting. My story coming up tomorrow is another edition of the Soapbox where a reader makes a very good point that in the future, guys who are caught up in the Cold War need to make their voices heard and tell the promoters, I want this fight, get it done. But also, a boxing insider who has negotiated many fights, knows how to read contracts, knows the boxing business, and has no horse in this race, and has done business with both entities, breaks down the $3 million contract. And I've been told by several people that contract is very flawed. There's a lot of holes in it, a lot of loopholes, and that they wouldn't sign it themselves. But with that being said, guys, we've all been in negotiations. You have first offer, second offer. You go back and forth. You have revisions. You draft changes. Then you come to a deal. I felt from the beginning that if we wanted to make this fight a reality, it was not going to happen June 15th for personal reasons for Nonito Donaire. And Donaire has a date on April 13th on HBO, which he was always going to go through. If both parties are serious about making this fight, it should be somewhere in the late summer or early fall of 2013.
I agree. I mean, you think it's actually going to happen? And is that April 13th fight, is that going to be Rigo?
All indications are it's going to be Rigo. And every time I talk to Bob Arum, he wants that fight. Because, again, if you do Rigo against Donaire, that's a solid,
right,
credible fight.
Yeah.
And people can say, well, you know, maybe this is a tougher stylistic matchup than Abner Mars. Now, if you do Darchinian, let the floodgates open.
Oh, yeah.
It'll be an open flogging season on Donaire in Top Rank. And I believe they're trying to take this fight to New York, and one venue I've been told is the Radio City Music Hall. And do you really want to go back to New York? And this is where the risk comes. Number one, Donaire is good, but so is Rigo. I still think that's a very tough matchup. Now,
yeah,
last time you went to New York, you faced a southpaw who wasn't exactly the most aggressive guy in Narvaez, and it was a disaster from a critical standpoint, even though it did well at the gate at the theater. Now, Rigo, to me, is a bigger, stronger, better version of Narvaez. This is not without risk, gentlemen.
Yeah, from an entertainment standpoint, I got to be honest with you, I'm going to probably be picking Rigo if they make that fight. I think he can – between the two fights, Maras and him, we were arguing about this earlier, I think he's the guy that could actually turn Nonito's lights out. I don't think Maras could do it.
My question, Steve, is that why hasn't Top Rank why haven't they secured a date in San Francisco for Nonito Donaire?
You know, I've asked that 50 million times, and they keep saying there's reasons they don't want to do it there. I think it's odd. I mean, Nonito Donaire, last I checked, is from San Leandro, which is basically
right,
the Bay Area, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Last I checked, he was not from Brooklyn or Staten Island. I just find that strange. I understand why they did it before. He was coming off a long layoff. You're in the New York media market.
Right.
You get a lot of publicity. But I can almost guarantee you that Mikey Garcia, from this point forward, when his nose heals, he'll be fighting in our area code.
I was having a couple conversations with, like, fight fans, and they were talking about, like, they were throwing now, like, you know, if Floyd Mayweather was to fight Guerrero, what would be the major reason? I said, well, if Floyd is smart, he would fight Guerrero, not in Vegas, but in the Bay Area. That would sell out super quick. You know, because he's a big draw here in the Bay. Why hasn't Nonito done it? He's a major draw. There's not just one city where there's this, a major population of Filipinos. You have a micro of cities, a big population of Filipinos all throughout the Bay Area. I just don't get it.
And you got to try it. And that's the thing with Donaire is, I know that his own actions have not helped him, you know, specifically killing that momentum of the Montiel victory a couple years ago and then signing a rogue deal with Golden Boy, which ended up getting null and void, costing him, I think, a lot of momentum and certainly time. But I was at three of Donaire's fights last year. The only one I didn't go to was the one in Houston. And I can honestly tell you this, if there was not a Latin presence on that card, people either weren't there or they were bored, or they were booing, and they left. And Gabe, we
right,
saw that firsthand after Rios Alvarado.
Oh.
They had about three rounds of the Nishioka fight, and it looked like a Dodger game in the sixth inning. People wanted to beat the traffic home.
No, it was an Asian skill game. Everybody was like, what's going on here? Yeah.
It was almost back when Steve was back in, where were you at, Korea? And when you were tweeting out that you felt like an American?
Well, yeah, I mean, it was just interesting to me that I felt the mistake in that card was back in October. And I told this to people at Top Rank at HBO. I said, you are making a large mistake here in making Rios Alvarado the opening bout, because you're going to risk not only having a huge letdown, but people leaving.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened. And that's a bad look for an HBO main event.
Absolutely.
And it's kind of undeserving. I think the fight was, the Nishioka fight, Donaire fight, wasn't a bad fight. It actually would have been a better fight in that position, because it would have been tense, and then you get this knockout, and then we just get World War III. You're absolutely right. Maybe you are. Well, I think that's proof that you're not a Top Rank shill. They didn't listen to you, and you're criticizing them.
Well, I think they should. That's the thing. What else is going on? Oh, it looks like Tim Bradley. I believe he's going to fight Ruslan Provodnikov, guys. I think that's very close to being a done deal.
Okay.
And as you guys tweeted earlier, it'll be VADA testing, and that will be at the Home Depot Center.
And that's
March
both 16th. Fighters, what I understand, is both fighters will be doing VADA testing at his opponent. That's interesting. So,
man,
so
that's
Tim,
this keeps getting more alive every single time.
And so is that the latest and greatest? I know you got to get out of here pretty fast. What are any other news and notes, or we got to read the article tomorrow?
No. I mean, we certainly. I'll spare a few minutes for you guys, of course. Come on. I don't have a. It's not like I have a reservation at Spago's here, guys. couple of things. I wrote this yesterday. Rios Alvarado. I think people are overthinking it. I think for Brandon Rios, is it a letdown that he's going back to Alvarado after he thought he had Pacquiao in his sights? Yes, but guys, don't you think that anytime these guys fight, fans should be excited?
Exactly. Yeah, I think so.
I agree. Yeah, without question.
Well, let me ask you this, Steve. Do you think that every time a guy beats a certain person, they should go back and go, this should be an easier fight?
Theoretically, yes, but I've mentioned this before on Twitter. There's a reason why you fight the fights. I mean, Bo Holyfield is a great example. I remember back when they first fought in 1992, Bo looked like one of the greatest heavyweights ever, who wasn't going to be beat for 10 years. And at Holyfield, people thought he should retire. And when they did the rematch, people were actually very, very wary and fearing for Holyfield's life. And he ended up fighting the fight of his life with the help of the fan man, and he turned it around. It happens, guys. I mean, rematches go the other way. That's why you fight the fight. And I think Alvarado this time around is going to try to do a better job of using his length and distance to really box. And staying within the division, guys, I think put this down because the WBC stated it publicly. They're going to make the winner of Judah Matisse April 27th, Judah Danny Garcia fight Lucas Matisse down the line. That's the one fight I really want to see. I want to see if Al Haymon is going to actually allow Danny Garcia in the ring with the machine.
I like this fight. I mean, honestly, I was talking about this earlier. I think it's a good fight and stuff like that. Hey, before we let you go, because of your birthday, and I know Gable's got some more questions, I just want to put this in. So who's your pick for the Super Bowl?
My heart says Ray Lewis, but my head says Frank Gorin Company. Let's just put it this way. I would take Baltimore plus the 5. I think that's a lot of points to give up.
Yeah, that's a very good pick. That's a really good pick. I still haven't picked yet. I'm gonna flip flop.
And I've always said that I started to get into college football and because of your tweets.
I do tweet a lot about stuff, don't I? Jeez, you know.
Speaking of great fights, Mosley Malignaggi didn't happen. Can you talk a little bit about what went on there, and also just what went on with this? The thumb injury, ghost injury with Danny Garcia. You've shed any light on that? What your opinion?
Well, the Danny Garcia thing, I'm inclined to believe him. I mean, it's a dangerous sport, and if he's injured, he's injured, but I wish they'd all get their story straight. I'll just leave it at that. I don't know what else to really say, and just because a guy tweets out a picture of a body part doesn't make it hurt, but again, I'll believe him, but they do need to get their story straight because we were hearing differing things. Didn't Chop Chop Corley basically say it was the thumb?
Right.
And then later it was changed to the ribs. So, again, I'm just throwing that out there. As for Paulie Malignaggi, Paulie went on an interview with Radio Raheem, one of our guys, and basically said he needs Golden Boy to live up to their deal.
Right.
And I believe that there certainly was a financial and contractual disagreement between Paulie and Golden Boy. And I just find it interesting that April 27th was his date. It was Paulie Malignaggi against somebody at the Barclays Center. All of a sudden, February 9th goes to the ashes. It blows up in smoke. that they don't make it a triple header. They throw Paulie off of that date completely. I'm telling you right now, I think there's trouble in paradise. If that was a marriage, they'd be sleeping in twin beds right now, like the Bradys.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think there's something amiss there, and it's just always funny that the company's platform is we're about the fighters, and we don't want to do it the way Don King used to do it. It was a clause, as he explained it, that kicked in because it's the first time as a headliner. But it's
right,
a headliner.
He's picking money.
Right.
Right. And it's going to be interesting that the dynamic, going back to Matisse and Garcia, he wants to fight Maidana. He told me that clearly. He goes, Steve, the fight I've always wanted is Maidana. Now he has a chance to face him. Maidana has nothing on the table right now.
Right.
And so,
though he was tweeting he wanted Malignaggi. Right.
Okay, and so Maidana's the fight that Paulie Malignaggi wants, and vice versa. The feeling is mutual. Well, they at Golden Boy, I think, are trying to make him take Andre Berto for a couple of reasons. Berto was with Al Haymon. They can get him another belt. But also, if they make Maidana Matisse, which Golden Boy and Richard Schaefer have really been talking about, well, all of a sudden now, two things happen for Al Haymon. Number one, Andre Berto has a chance to win a belt right back on Showtime after, you know, some another bad loss. And then second of all, Danny Garcia doesn't have to face the machine. And I think that's the dynamic that's going on in that whole situation.
It's interesting. It's like they're betting against themselves on some level. Or Al Haymon's kind of secretly taking control. And while it worked, his clout got them Showtime and all these pieces put in place. And there's a lot of people that are kind of benefiting from this from the top to the bottom. And you know what I mean. All of a sudden, they're also feeling the grip of Al Haymon. And that really, you know, he's kind of the straw that stirs the drink on almost every level.
Another thing to look out for, guys, is it's very interesting that it has not been announced who Mayweather will fight. Now, I'm assuming it's going to be Robert Guerrero. All indications are it is the Ghost. The big question, I've talked to people on both sides of the fence on this, is where does that fight land? I don't think it's a sure thing anymore that it's HBO. I think Showtime is absolutely in play. And for the first time, HBO is actually worried. And it's going to be interesting to see how that shifts the power and the balance of this business. And, you know, as one person said to me, if Al Haymon takes him over to Showtime, the problem is at that point he loses his Mayweather muscles and the ability to flex them over HBO.
Wow.
And I think there are some things that need to be settled as if to where is Canelo Alvarez going to go, where is he going to land. And all these issues to me are still being ironed out, which is why – because remember, a couple weeks ago, they were supposed to announce this last week. And they're not going to announce it on Super Bowl week. And so I think the question is, when are they going to announce this, and where does this fight end up?
Yeah, I think if it ends up being Guerrero, it was one thing when it was the build-up to the Ortiz fight. We didn't know
right.
He was going to fight. And he sends out the tweet, you know, me versus Ortiz, you know, I'm back, whatever. And everybody went crazy. You could just feel like drop the mic and walk away. It was a very interesting fight. We were all excited. Guerrero, I don't think it's going to have that same impact.
No, it's not. And by the way,
right.
And I know that there were different circumstances he's moving up in weight. He was injured. He went life and death with such a guy that was handled very easily by Jesus Soto Carras, who's never exactly been Ray Leonard.
Yeah. Yeah, this is very true. I mean, Styles make fights and everything, but damn. You know, and probably a less rusty, you know, more on his game, Celtic Aydin, who's not coming off of an injury and a long layoff. Very telling. Yeah, I think that I don't know, maybe now he'll get a shot at whether he'll choose. Well, Steve, thank you so much for stopping by, and get out there and party. I know you got body shots and
all right, guys, I appreciate it. You guys have a great night.
All right, man.
Yeah. Steve Kim with this here on Leaving the Ring. As always, man, he's always fun and stuff on Leaving the Ring Radio. Hey, really quick, because I keep forgetting.
He's going to get all that in, too, by 9 o'clock. Cause, you
know, I know.
78, he's got to get to bed.
Really quick, because I keep forgetting. If you haven't, on the website, we have a QNR scan. You can scan, because we get always folks saying that they can't get it on their phone, they can't this and that, and you can scan it, and you can listen to us live. We have the radio show on there. You also have the Instagram and the Twitter and the Facebook, and obviously the website as well. You can read the articles that we get, or you can get us. You can scan it if you're following us on Twitter, it is the picture on the side. You know, that whole background?
Yeah.
On there and stuff. So check it out. Thanks for Scotch Mob for making that for us for a while back. And it's funny, it's because we've had it for a while. I just didn't know that we had it.
Is that it for guests? Are we all done?
That is it.
Let's take a caller.
Yeah, if you want to call in,
215-7598.
I'm going to go back really quick with Soto Karas, man. This is a guy you cannot count out. Every time we want to talk about him, we end up falling into something else, man. It's a guy that you just cannot count out. Really impressed. I mean, you talk about a drive. The guy has a drive, and we saw that. We had a chance to really witness what this guy can bring. I think Gabriel's back on mute and stuff. But we're going to... You there, Gabriel? We're going to patch in a fight fan really quick here on Leaving the Ring. Let's go with area code 860. You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind? 860. No?
Oh, I'm sorry. Dave?
Yeah, brother. You're on live right now.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was just calling back. This is CT again.
Oh, CT. What's
up? Good. I was listening a little bit what you guys are talking about. I'm glad I got to hear what was going on with the Timothy Bradley thing. I wasn't sure who he was going to fight next. Well, what's the guy's name? I forgot who the...
Ruslan Provodnikov. That could be an interesting fight.
I'm not sure if I ever heard of that guy. Who has he fought?
Ruslan Provodnikov?
Yeah.
Well, he's been he was Manny Pacquiao's chief sparring partner for the Bradley fight. That was kind of where he had his out. Close loss, I believe, with Mauricio Herrera. This is back I want to say the beginning of here's his record. January 2011. And then he had a big win with Ivan Popovka, who's not a big dude, but. Big name, but it was a solid, exciting win. But really, to me, it was the his last fight after the Bradley Pacquiao fight, where he came out of that training camp. He took on Jose Reynoso, took him out fast, but it was really how he did it, the way he moved. He was much more fluid, and it seemed like he'd learned quite a bit. He's been on ice since then, since last June. So it'll be an interesting fight. Both of them have been kind of off for a while, and they'll be clashing in the ring. I think it's a nice mix of styles. He's with Thompson Boxing. He's trained by Freddie Roach these days, Provodnikov. Speed should be fairly interesting. He's always in shape, always ready to fight.
I was wondering, what do you guys think about the Devin Alexander Cal Brook fight? I know it's not here yet, but just wondering your takes on that fight.
I like that fight. I'm leaning towards Kell Brook in it. I think, you know, some respects, it's almost like the same guy fighting each other, except one's unproven and the other one's Devin Alexander. Kell Brook kind of
lovely. Oh, man.
Exact power, but they're good boxers.
You know, they're I honestly think that Kell Brook is the truth. I
like Kell Brook. I think he's going to win. But,
he's still
not fully formed, you know?
No, he's not fully formed, but, you know, I remember back, this is last year, where I wanted to see Kell Brook and Mike Jones. We found out what happened to Mike Jones, but I don't know. I mean, I still think that Alexander is just really small for that division. That's my opinion. I think he just moved up a little too soon. There's the development there that he still doesn't have. He's got quick hands, but we've talked about this. He just doesn't know how to turn those punches. And when you don't know how to turn those punches, you're going to have problems. Kell Brook, to me, knows how to turn the punches. He's just not that polished yet where we can be super excited. But I think he's just a much better fighter, though. Whatever flaws he has, I think he should be able to pull it off.
Yeah.
We're going to find out who he is in this fight. You know,
absolutely.
How about the guy that Alexander, you know, who was a Kotelnik? Is he in the radar in any fights coming up or no?
Which one?
Kotelnik. Has he had any fights lined up since that loss to Alexander? Because I think he's a good 140-pound fighter.
No, he was kind of on. he was on like mothballs from what I understood. He was getting ready to retire, like he literally like at a sheep farm or something like that. And and I'm like, totally not kidding. And somebody told me that at Fortune, I think. And then they kind of they lured him out. It was a good money fight. He's like, screw it, you know. Like it was almost like Corey Sanders. You know, it was like, all right, let me take this one last shot. And almost because you're in shape, but you don't care, and you kind of know it's your last shot. You just a little looser or something. And he pulls out the win, doesn't get the decision, and I think he fought one more time, but that was about it. You know, it's kind of funny.
Yeah,
but I haven't heard from him since, so I don't know. I'll look into that.
Yeah, CT, thanks for calling in, brother.
Thank you.
Let's batch in another fight fan really quick over here on Leaving the Ring. Let's go with area code 951. What's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring.
Hey, it was a good show, man. I like that little Joel Diaz, man. Only seen that Showtime fight, but he showed me a lot in that fight.
Yeah, yeah. He's you know what? We've been following him for quite some time, even before that fight. And honestly, taking, not jumping automatically, even with his promoter and stuff, going off of that fight. We've seen that happen a lot of times. They got a good show out, and then they run with that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Right,
And then after, you end up kind of losing that spark and specialness from that fighter because you go, well, you know what? I got something here. Let me bank off of it, and let's see what we can do. But they were smart about it. They said, you know what? He had a great run with that one fight, which was the beginning of the year. Let's pull back, and let's just build them. And
right.
That, to me, just kind of tells me that. And, you know, I could be wrong. We all could be wrong about it. But to me, in my opinion, it just tells me allow him to grow, and we're going to see a better, stronger, polished, and more better fights out of the kid.
Well, what I've seen is when I've seen him get dropped and get back up, I like to see adversity, you know, especially
absolutely.
Like the 80s and 90s, when you
yep.
can really see what these fighters have got. Because with a lot of these fighters nowadays, they don't fine-tune. Like Ortiz, I like him, always thought he was good, but he fights the same way every time. They don't never sharpen their skills. And like Tavoris Cloud, I liked him, but after that, who said that Mac fight, he didn't know how to cut the ring off. So then you've seen it in his last fight.
Right.
So like a lot of these fighters don't step their game up. They all fight the same to me. I mean, they never change, the newer fighters.
There's a lot of, yeah, it's like one gear. I was like watching the Charlo kid this last week. And
right.
Steve's actually big on his brother. He likes his right hand, likes his power, a little more aggressive. My big thing with Charlo is he just doesn't change gears. A lot of these guys, they walk in and they watch Floyd so much or something. They watch
right.
older Floyd. They miss Floyd when he was on his toes and quick of foot. Now they did this flat-footed, come forward, no piston jab.
Right.
A lot of the old-timers right. in the gym will talk about no bounce to the fighters. You know, that little kind
right.
of just shuffle, that bounce, that energy that the old school guys do. Like,
and if
like
they have
Jenny
bounce,
Little Red Lopez or Salvador
right.
Sanchez,
and
they
if,
have bounce.
And if they have bounce, if they do have bounce nowadays, it's like the bounce that it's more like a confusing. That they're confused of what they want to do. So the bounce is more nervousness.
And then I think
yeah,
they don't know how to change. I don't think they know how to adapt during the fight. So if they get hit or they find out they're getting hit with the left too much, they don't know how to step to the right. They keep getting hit
absolutely.
With the same punch, like you walking to the same door. You know, they don't know how to change the fight up. You got 12 rounds to decide what you're going to do. You know, your first three was always to fill out, figure it out. The next four, and then you break them down. That's what your strategy is all about. They always talk about strategies. I'm watching tape. But everybody's still fighting the same.
Yeah, I agree. You know, it's I think everything goes in kind of peaks and valleys. I mean, I think we've seen that.
Right.
The Kronk gym. Look at, the Goosens was rolling for a while there. When he had Chico,
right.
The
yeah.
10 Goose.
And
now it's Mike Stafford in Ohio. I think that's
where I'm from,
bro. What's that?
Okay, that's where I'm originally from, Akron, so.
Oh yeah, I mean,
yeah.
Dude, I think there's something brewing in Ohio. I mean,
yeah,
I don't know what
no,
you guys like. A seed was planted like you know, 20 years ago or something, and it's just
yeah,
now bearing fruit. I really am enjoying.
I'm loving it. They finally getting that opportunity because for a while
right.
it was just all Detroit. Detroit was, you know, taking it up with Proc and all them.
Yeah, I think it just takes time. Everything's cyclical. You know, the wild card was on the ups. Now you see, you know, Virgil Hunter's group, his stable is on the ups.
Right.
And it's going to take its peaks and its valleys. And that's what I think people make such a big deal, like the fight that saves boxing or this fight exposed a fighter or exposed a trainer. You know, boxing is a metaphor for life, and no one event makes or breaks you as a human being, you would hope. And I kind of look at each fight camp the same way.
Well, it's just like one time I was told by another radio show, we were number one. I said, well, what about next week? There's a circle of life, buddies. There's a circle of life. Hey, brother, thanks for calling. I'm going to put you back on hold, okay?
All right. Thanks, brother.
Thanks so much, man. Great call.
All right. Thanks.
What some of the best advice I got, one of the classes I took when I first got out here was a seminar. And it turned out to be screenwriting. It was a high-level guy. And he said, you know, the thing nobody will tell you about the business, there's two pieces of advice I got, is just because you're excited to be out there doesn't mean we have to be. And the other was that there's no such thing as making it. That, you know, there's no top of the mountain. There's peaks and there's valleys and there's everything in between. And you just kind of have to enjoy the journey, you know. And that's, I think that's true of any, you know, of boxing. Like, you know, a guy gets knocked out and everybody's like, oh, it's over, like the end of their career. But look what happened with Molina. Nobody would have thought that the next year, he would have the confidence, much less the wherewithal, new training camp, to go in there just out of nowhere, like land one good punch on a guy that, you know, on paper probably should beat him. And now he's back in the mix, you know. That's boxing. That's life, you know.
Absolutely. Let's patch in another fight fan. Let's see if they want to talk to us here on Leaving the Ring. Area code 724. You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind?
I'm still on from earlier, guys.
Okay.
Yeah. All right, brother. We'll put you back on hold and stuff real quick.
We'll hear a brewing.
Hey, let's go back really quick with Gamboa because we were getting into that question. I wanted to hear your thoughts and your input about the repercussion of what happens for him with this contract with SMS, which is 50% rapper 50 Cent. And what do you think should happen to him? And then I'm going to go into my rant about an issue. Go ahead.
Well, I think, you know, I'm not sure about the contract right now, you know.
I did reach out to them and stuff like that, and, you know, they haven't responded. And as soon as they will, we'll throw it out there. But your thoughts?
I think, you know, we'll see, you know, about all that. I mean, I think like a good promoter, they should just wrap their arms around him and protect him and get him through this. I mean, they wanted to be his guy, and so now they are. And as for everything they need to be facing, I mean, I think it's just kind of too early to tell. You know, it seems pretty extensive what we know about it, that there's potential calendars and there's, you know, no referring to him, you know, as far as like a doping calendar of when to get him off was like December 1st. Some of the articles that came out, it's kind of funny. They're like, they admittedly wrote in, like, it's kind of confusing and we don't really know. It's like, well, then don't report it. Like, in my piece, I wrote, you know, Gamboa tested positive for being a modern athlete. It's the name of my article on Max Boxing. And really all it is, like, people are calling this Balco East, right? Here's a major difference between Balco and what's going on here. With Balco, it was, they were innovators. And they were taking guys, you know, from top level to championship level. That was the whole point. It was a Project World Champion or a Project World Record. You know, they had a lot of projects going on. But they created this substance that could not be detected and were very, very effective using it, and it really changed the game. What's going on, in my opinion, in Miami is what I've been talking about this whole time, these anti-aging clinics. This guy didn't really change the game. It's a ring that got caught. That surrounds a anti-aging clinic. And this is the second in 2 years now that I've seen, like, a big ring. And you know, Don Hales, the HRC clinic, they didn't get pulled in as, you know, giving it to athletes or anything. They were kind of misrepresenting their medicine. But With this clinic, they were giving out HGH, it sounds like, IGF-1,
right.
Another performance-enhancing drug, and synthetic testosterone. But these are the same kind of clinics that we're talking about, like the Desert Oasis in Las Vegas, where Lamont Peterson got his thing. I mean, I'm not saying they're giving illegal scripts or anything like that, but what we are talking is and I'd heard that rumor surrounding the Don Hale case. Nothing ever came of it, and I have something kind of coming out on that. But in this case, you know, with Gamboa, I think now it just calls into question his fights. You've got to look at what was in his substance. And I think it goes back to what I've been talking about in terms of testing, that the using carbon isotope ratio testing versus the TE ratio test. I mean, if he's training normally and it's got like six times – if he's under the 6-to-1 in Nevada or in New York where he also fought or anywhere else where it's 4-to-1, he still could be using synthetic testosterone, and nobody ever would know it. They don't test for EPO, HGH in most cases with these commissions. So who knows what was going through him and how he was getting it. It just shows more, and I think what my article kind of talks about, and I'll try to wrap this up fast, is that we shouldn't be surprised by this. We shouldn't be labeling it Balco East. These guys aren't like Balco. They're not changing the game.
Right.
They're just more of the problem. So we shouldn't act like – we shouldn't single out Gamboa any more than we should single out Lamont Peterson or Andre Berto and go, you guys are bad and everybody else is good. I would say Nonito Donaire is clean because he's testing himself year-round. That we know, and the system seems to be – even the guy that just got caught in Dorset is the best. So – and he wants to get back in as soon as he can. That kind of speaks to the efficacy of VADA, I think. And although we know about USADA, I didn't press him on it, but I think we know what time it is, why he wouldn't want to go with them, all the clouds that are surrounding him. So there it is. You know, I think really where we're ultimately leading and where this rant is leading is just let's look at the problem. Let's fix the problem because we know what the solution is, CIR, universal testing. Let's just do it and stop fixing the blame.
Absolutely. We've got about like another 5 more minutes here on Leaving the Ring. And I always want to say thank you for everybody that tunes in and listens to us. You know, we've been around for 4 years. And, you know, really quick, you know. And the reason I left this at the tail end of the show and stuff, because we always want to keep the subject about boxing. Just to throw out there, you know, is that we do this out of our free time. I've put in my own money into this radio show just to give this as a gift, you know. And we try our hardest to bring you the best content and stuff. And I really don't like trying to compete with other folks, and I don't try to compete. You know, if you don't like us and you don't like our show and you don't like the fact that we try to bring truth into the sport and we try to expose the wrongs that happen in the sport and we're not a bunch of cheerleaders, I understand that, you know. You know, but name calling and just going out of your way to just be just right out rude, man, all I got to tell you is just get a life. And this whole subtweet thing and stuff, it's so immature. Grow up. Just grow up, you know. And this goes off to the ladies and the men that do this whole thing and stuff. It's tasteless. Have a little bit more class. That's why I don't do it.
It's unnecessarily negative. And I kind of attacked it today a little bit in a couple tweets, and they were kind of pointed. And this guy, J-Rod, some chef from NorCal, like, we're going to settle it. I offered it like a gentleman, like I did with Mark Ortega. You know, you have words, and we kind of went back around and around. All right, now we got to back up our words with our fists, and I'm going to do it in this gentlemanly way. Get in the ring with me. That's a whole other story. But this guy, it seems like he wants to try to force some confrontation. I didn't come to you. I don't know or care who you are, but when you go on Twitter and you use my name and say, this guy's a puppet for Top Rank, or this guy performs homosexual acts on Victor Conte, or he takes his money, and Alex Ariza said the same thing. When you do that, and I offer you to come on my show, our show, that we work really hard on, and Steve, you know, or Dave, you pay money for this show to be on, and it's our pleasure to do. And we're going to offer you a bit of that time to explain yourself with facts and knowledge, not insults, like on a playground. Not with your fists, but do what smart people do. And when you decline that and you offer no, we'll see each other at a fight. Guess what? When I see you at a fight,
I'm just going to laugh at you, and I'm just going to ignore you because you're a small person. So that's kind of all I agree with you, Dave. Enough of the negativity, enough of the bullshit. Let's get to the news. This was such a fun show tonight. We had such wonderful interviews. Those are the things we should be focusing on, how to fix our sport, how to give our listeners the best kind of show that we possibly can.
Yeah, and you know, and that's why I wanted to point out, I said at the tail end, because I thought we were having such a great time, and that's the whole purpose why we did start Leaving the Ring Radio. You know, to me, it's not about this and that. You want to be competitive? Absolutely great. I'm all for that. You know, I think we've preached that if you care about this sport, and I've said this, the metaphor is become a Jehovah's Witness. What do? They go knock on people's door. They try to make other fans. That's what we're supposed to do. The other thing, you know, throwing jabs at this person, that person, hey, man, it's all good. It's all dandy and stuff. I just don't care for it. I really don't. I enjoy when the listeners call in and they enjoy what we do and they respect what we do, you know.
That's true. And with that, we bring you the fight schedule.
The fight schedule.
This is Friday night, February 1st. Wow, this year's flying by. I just want to be the first guy to say that. It really isn't. At the ISS Dome in Dusseldorf, Germany, Felix Sturm, 37-3-2 versus Sam Solomon, 42-11. I'm going with Sturm, but I think it's going to be a really fun fight, and I think Solomon's got a chance to overwhelm him with volume. It's weird. He keeps
awkward. You can't count the guy out.
No. And Sturm is like, it's like he's going back to that well of like volume punching guys. Like the last few guys he's fought all kind of have that aggressive style. But Sam, I think he's a little long in the tooth. I think he's good enough to beat Giovanni Lorenzo, not good enough to beat Felix Sturm. At the UIC Pavilion in Chicago, Illinois, ESPN2 Friday Night Fights, Carlos Molina, the big one, at 20.
I like this fight.
5-2 versus Corey Spinks, 39-7. What do you think, Dave?
I like this fight. You know, I know that Corey Spinks was the guy that we never wanted to watch at one time, but go back to what you just said right now about Felix Sturm. Valiant puncher beginning, then, you know, guy that didn't want to be like that, and then just kind of reverted. Well, here's the opposite, is that Corey Spinks was not a valiant puncher in the beginning of his career. He was a cutie. Now he's become more of a grit. And that's all due because your legs have gone. And when your legs have gone, guess what? We get more exciting fights. This is a good fight. Carlos Molina, it all depends on what he's been stuck on, meaning that he threw something against the wall, has it slid down and fallen to the ground? We don't know. And what I'm talking about is when he fought Kirtland, he became a hugger. He almost became a small version of John Ruiz. That's what a lot of fight fans were calling him, the baby John Ruiz. Has he stayed with that style, or has he went back to a volume puncher? Somebody that we want to watch, somebody that's going to give Corey Spinks a really good fight. I'm hoping it's going to be a really good fight. I'm going to go with Carlos Molina on this one. I think he's going to go back to the old style.
Yeah, I'm taking Carlos Molina. I don't think he needs to worry about what's coming back. I think he needs to kind of like buzzsaw through and move forward. Underneath that in support... partying like it's 2000. Jose Luis Castillo, 64-11-1 versus Antoine Smith, 24-4-1. Yikes. I'm going Antoine Smith. He's a hardworking man. He's a blue-collar guy. He's facing Castillo, who is ancient. I just think if Antoine Smith can't beat this guy, you know, I don't know what. Because... I mean, it's just an older version of JLC, and I mean, he looks good in his last fight, but he gets hit way too much. The legs are tired. I think Smith, with his kind of like blue collar style, should be able to get it done.
Yeah, you know, but it's almost like it's like a dare. Do you want to dare go against an older fighter? There was almost a time, there was a year that the older fighter was always pulling it off, and you didn't want to go against that. This is a new year. Do we go against Jose Luis Castillo? The logic choice is to go against him and say that he's really past his prime. He's not going to pull it off. But this is the beginning of the new year. Is it going to be almost like 2012? I'm not sure.
Yeah, well, we'll see. It's I like Anton Smith.
I can tell you the guarantee with that fight with Anton Smith and Jose Luis Castillo, I'm going to probably end up having a couple of brewskis during that fight.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. Jump into the next night because we got like 2 minutes left. At the Coliseo, Ruben Rodriguez and Beoman Puerto Rico on DirecTV pay-per-view. Juanma López, 31-2 versus Aldemar Santos, 18-3. Support there, you got McJoe Arroyo versus Rodrigo Guerrero, Omar Salado versus Jonathan Gonzalez, McWilliams Arroyo, Sonny Borjaro, and the McRib is back. And Jose Gonzalez is also fighting. He's 21-0 versus the dreaded Tom Bob Anderson. At the Convention Center in McAllen, Texas, on Telefutura, Andre Darrell, 20-1 versus Milton Nunez, 25-6-1. And Telefutura also in support there, Jose Felix, 22-0-1 versus Gerardo Robles, 16-10. And that, also at the Cosmopolitan in Las Vegas, Nevada, Frankie Gomez, 14-0 versus Leonard Lane, 13-2. And Mickey Bay, 18-0-1 versus Robert Rodriguez, 7-2. I'll tell you, Gomez Lane, sleeper pick of the week. I'm going with Lane in the upset.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know. Gomez, you know,
but I'm going with it.
You know, Gomez, I hate to say he's a one trick pony right now until he shows me otherwise. Hey, I may ask you, is the McRib back?
I think the McRib is back.
Anyways, fight fans, thanks for tuning in. We'll see you guys. Actually, we're not going to be back next week on Thursday. I didn't even let Gabriel know about this. We might
that
be.
Works out perfectly, Dave.
Yeah.
I didn't let you know about something. So
yeah, I got something up on Thursday, so it might be on a Wednesday or a Friday. We'll let you guys know, though, on a tweet or on Facebook. Hey, don't, you know what? Be sure to check out the Q&R if you haven't. It's really cool. I loved it. I just discovered it, so I might be the last guy on Earth that figured out you could do something like that. And if you're one of the guys that's on that last Earth with me, you're going to be excited about it, that Q&R scan. So check it out here on Leaving the Ring. Once again, don't drink and drive. Have a good time. Be safe with your family.
Peace.